This is only the start. You guys have great futures ahead of you.
Caught by Ingram over the defender.
This kid had the ability to open his hips and go get it.
Pass is intercepted by Landon Collins.
This kid is so powerful.
What a play by Devon Kennard.
We'll see how exceptional a wide receiver this kid is.
Touchdown, Giants! Jump ball, Odell Beckham Jr. made the catch with one hand for the touchdown!
Welcome to another edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live. Live from the Combine in Indianapolis, Paul Dottino, John Schmelk. The third day of shows from here, another two-hour special, 12-2 right here on Giants.com. The workouts that everyone loves have gotten started here. You have the offensive linemen working out on the field as we speak. We'll track some of those results as we continue through the show. We'll also hear from some of your favorite players, including Saquon Barkley and Quentin Nelson in just a little bit. And later on in the show, another great set of guests, Greg Cosell, NFL Films, Paul Schwartz, New York Post, Bob Glauber from Newsday, Rick Saratella from NFL Draft Bible, Kyle Krabs from NDT Scouting, and Jeff Risden from Real GM. And Paul, we're finally getting into the meat of the on-the-field work, and like we've spoken about before, this will simply confirm what you already know, or maybe if guys surprise you with some of their numbers, you take another look at their tape to see if you missed something.
That's true, and hopefully for those guys, they don't get hurt like we found out with Price yesterday. In the weightlifting.
And the news on that, by the way, he says it's not a full tear of the pec, which is good. It's partial. So
right.
He doesn't think he's going to have to miss a lot of time, which is great news. The guard / center out of Ohio State.
Yeah, he goes and does the bench press yesterday. Aaron Wellman, the Giants strength and conditioning coach, actually was the gentleman who was spotting those guys. And, I saw Aaron afterwards, and I just said, you do what you can. Everybody knows they're under supervision. You're taking all the precautions and safety measures to make sure that everything comes out okay. But sometimes a freak thing will happen when you're doing a drill. And the player will suffer an injury, and then you just have to go from there. So that's one of the big things here, too, John, to be perfectly frank with you, is that every agent and player is holding their breath that they come out of this thing clean without doing something to themselves that could hurt their draft stock.
No question about it. And let's talk about the big story from yesterday, and that is Saquon Barkley. He benched over 20 reps, more than some offensive linemen. You watch him at the podium. He has legs that are the size of tree trunks. The calves were just huge. Looks like a running back, built like a running back, and he by far had the biggest crowd. Here's a taste of what Saquon Barkley had to say when he addressed the media in Indianapolis yesterday.
Any team that want to draft me and that's blessing me with the opportunity to play for their franchise is a blessing to me, you know. You grow up as a little kid dreaming of playing in the NFL, and you have the opportunity, and the team's going to pick you. So if it's the Browns, if it's the Giants, or wherever I get drafted, I'm going to come in with my head low and ready to work. Something that I believe in and something that I learned at Penn State is you guys can control what you can control. And at the end of the day, if you get focused on that stuff, you take away from yourself. So I'm just focused on coming out here and try to dominate this combine, getting to know the guys. And when I'm working out, push myself and push the guys I'm working out with every single day and try to get better. Any team in my mind would be a good fit. Any team that want to pick me in my mind would be a good fit. But you look at that team last year, they were in a lot of games too, and they had a lot of injuries. But you got guys like Odell, that tight end, Sterling Shepard, a quarterback that's established and proven himself and got two Super Bowl rings. And if I was fortunate enough to go to a team like that and have the success I had in college football, I think that would also be another good fit.
The New York teams mentioned there, Saquon Barkley, if you haven't heard, actually grew up a New York Jets fan, but he was asked about the Giants there as well. And Paul, everyone we've talked to, no one doubts that maybe of all the players here, he might have the best chance of anyone to be that generational type of Hall of Fame future star player of this group.
Yeah, the biggest negative thing you can say about him is that he only does maybe a few things well instead of spectacular.
And maybe his style could have to be adjusted. Know? Tries to make a big play out of every run rather than taking what's there.
But again, the
minor stuff.
The overall and total production is that the guy makes things happen.
Yep.
And he's a big play player. And he certainly has a legitimate chance of becoming the superstar in this draft for years to come.
And therefore a chance to be the second overall pick for the Giants. If they don't go running back early, they could wait till the second round. One guy that might be there is Darius Geis out of LSU. He talked about what his strengths are as a running back.
Oh, I'm very powerful on the field. One guy rarely ever tackles me. You know, at LSU, we don't really pass the ball much, so I can't really speak on my receiving end. Just not how we operate our offense, but I'm pretty good receiving as well. I'll show you guys that tomorrow as well.
And to me, Darius Geis is more the Paul DeTino type of running back. He's going to get you 3 or 4 yards, power it in there. He's your traditional power every down back. Then you have other guys, too, here, like Ronald Jones, who came in a little bit light and a little bit slighter than the other guys. But then you had Nick Chubb, Sony Michel. Everyone looked the part up at the podium. And a lot of these guys are going to go in the first and second round and early third, and they could be starters from day one in the NFL.
I'm going to give you a couple of comments here that I wrote down when I was listening to Geis at the podium. This is a quote. He said, when he was asked about what would you tell teams when you're you know, in line to be picked, that he said, well, if you don't draft me, I'm going to give your defense hell.
It was a great answer. Everyone laughed.
Quite a comment from him. He also said he felt that in college they didn't allow him to show his shiftiness or his pass-catching ability, and said that he really wants to prove that to NFL teams to raise his stock, because he clearly thinks he's more of a complete back than a lot of people think. And then the only thing I was going to say is he said he faced a lot of stacked box defenses in college. He's not afraid of that.
Yeah, LSU not known for their high-flying passing game.
No.
So teams are certainly focused on the run. One other guy I want to watch today in the pass-catching drills, in addition to Geis, is Ronald Jones, a guy who looks like he should be a very good receiver, but I think he only had 30 to 40 targets in his 3 years at USC. They just didn't use him in the passing game. When they did, he was fine, but he doesn't have a ton of reps. Those are two guys in the running back receiving drills this year that you want to keep an eye on. If you remember back when the Giants drafted Andre Williams, he's a guy that struggled a lot in those receiving drills. So you got to take a look at these guys. That's one of the drills for running backs that is actually important. And we know the Giants, and Pat Shurmur said this on Wednesday, they want running backs that can block, run, and catch. It's very important. So those receiving drills today for the running backs will be very important to watch.
I'm going to further that. Pat Shurmur wants players who have good hands, period.
Yeah, I believe he said, we have no use for players that can't catch the football, I believe was his actual quote. Also, we heard from the offensive line yesterday, and the top guy on everybody's board at that position is Quentin Nelson from Notre Dame. He was asked by our very excited Paul DeTino why he deserves to be a top five selection.
I think I should be talked in that regard, the top five conversation, because you have guys that are dominating the NFL right now, and Aaron Donald, Geno Atkins, Fletcher Cox, that have just been working on interior guys, and you need guys to stop them, and I think I'm one of those guys. You talk to quarterbacks, and they say if a DN gets on the edge, that's fine. They can step up into the pocket and make a throw, which a lot of quarterbacks, if given the opportunity, can do that. So that's what I give, is a pocket to step up in. And I think I also help the offense establish the run through my nastiness. And establishing the run also opens up the passing game.
Quentin Nelson, one of the best guard prospects we've seen since probably Zach Martin, Paul, and he measured into 34-inch arms, which tells you, you know what, if you want to get cute, you could even try him at tackle maybe down the road, but obviously a consideration in the top five, even though guard traditionally not what is considered a premium position in the league.
Yeah, I think he did 35 reps on the bench, which is pretty darn well impressive. One of the things he said, and I know that Dave Gettleman said, it's very important to talk to these guys to find out about their mentality. Nelson said something interesting. He said to me, I like to keep my head down and work very hard. It's important for me to earn respect and how I carry myself on and off the field. And I you know, that's a mentality that you don't always get from these guys coming out of college. Some of them will just have such a big head. They think they're hot stuff. They're going to get drafted. They're strutting their feathers. No. This is a guy who's just a blue-collar, lunch-pail guy who wants to earn everything he gets. How can you not love that?
We'll hear from a couple of offensive linemen later on in the show. Isaiah Wynn from Georgia, Will Hernandez from UTEP, so stay tuned for that. We'll also hear from Chris Pettit, Giants scout, in a conversation with Madeline Burke. We'll be right back with Greg Cassell from NFL Films on Big Blue Kickoff Live on Giants.com. Stick with us.
Man, Combine Week, one of the craziest weeks of my life. All I remember is just the crazy meetings, being nervous, all the crazy tests, all the crazy questions. But my biggest memory was getting the cold tub every single night. Every single night, cold tub, 10 minutes, making sure my legs is right. And then once the field day came up, ready to do drills, I was fresh, ready to go. I ran one of the fastest times at the combine, so I give all the credit to that cold tub. So combine week was a crazy week, biggest blessing, and definitely a week I won't forget.
You're getting a guy that has that it factor, you know? You can't teach it, you can't learn it. It's either you have it or you don't. This is what I love to do. This is my passion.
We're back here on Big Blue Kickoff Live on Giants.com. Paul Dottino, John Schmelk, the man in the middle, is Greg Cosell, one of the great producers. There's a lot of other stuff, too, over at NFL Films. Nobody watches more tape than this guy. He's been very involved in the draft. Hasn't finished all his work yet. Neither have I. We still have 2 months before the draft happens. So there is time to keep watching these guys. Greg, how are you? It's good to see you.
I'm doing great. It's good to be with you guys. You know, I'm originally a Queens guy. You probably didn't know that, but that's where I grew up.
Jets fan growing up?
You know, I was actually a big AFL fan.
Really?
You know, in the 60s.
How about
that?
What's wrong with that?
I was a huge AFL fan, but, you know, I went to high school in Queens, played high school. My claim to fame in high school basketball was I went head-to-head against Ernie Grunfeld.
How'd that go for you?
He had 36 points and 25 rebounds, but if it wasn't for me, he probably would have had 45 points and, you know, and 30 rebounds. I did a heck of a job.
Taking the optimistic viewpoint.
Exactly.
I like
exactly.
That.
All right, let's start it. Greg, let's start number 2 year for the Giants. Obviously, I think they can go in a lot of different ways
right
here. Obviously, you can look for your heir apparent to Eli Manning, depending on what they think of Davis Webb, and we'll ask you about him as well.
Right.
Or you can go for what most people think, and I guess we'll start here, is the best overall graded player in the class, and that's Saquon Barkley. And we were talking before you came on. I think it's interesting. He reps over 20 on the bench. He's 235, but he's not a guy that's going to get you those tough 3 yards in the middle of the line. He tries to bounce everything and make a big play.
He's a fascinating – look, first of all, let's start with the fact that he's extremely talented.
Oh, he's
a great
player.
I've watched a ton – I watched pretty much all of his carries this year and all of his past targets. So I've seen a little bit of Saquon Barkley.
I think so.
Yeah. I think I feel pretty good about what I've seen with Saquon Barkley. And he has a spectacular way about him. He's a game-changing type player, and you never pass up game-changing type players. I know there's this philosophy out there about don't draft running backs high. That's silly. If a guy is a game-changing kind of player, then you draft him.
And Dave Gettleman said that same exact thing on Wednesday,
right,
by the way.
Right, and there are runs he has where he looks like Barry Sanders. I mean, he's that kind of back.
I made that comparison, you know, last week.
But, see, I knew you were smart. Right? but he's an interesting guy because for a 200, I think he was 233,
yep,
and we know he's gone viral with all his weightlifting, and yep, that's incredible. Believe me, hey, I wish I looked like that. But he's not a pure power type runner. He almost runs more like a scat back. And again, that's not a knock. This is not to say, wow, he's not a good player. He's just an interesting, for someone who's done this for a long time and seen a lot of backs over the years, studied a lot of backs, for his size, he's just kind of an interesting guy because when you're 233 with that kind of build, I'm not saying you expect the guy to run over people, but he's not really a hit it up in there kind of runner.
Agree.
He's a scat back.
And I can't even use it. Like, on the goal line, I'd be a little concerned.
Right.
Like, he tries to go over the top all the time. He doesn't drop his pads and try to power his way in.
But don't lose sight. He is a
yes,
three down back because of his capability in the pass game. You can line him up detached from the formation. He runs vertical routes, not just your typical
yep,
check down routes or your typical flat routes. He runs vertical routes. So he is a three down back, and he's a spectacular player, and he's a game-changing type talent. And we don't know what Dave's going to do, but my point is you don't pass those guys up.
Well, now let me ask you this, Greg. We know that the Giants have made it very clear their top priority is to enhance the offensive line. They've got to do
That's a Dave Gettleman thing. He's an O-line, D-line guy.
No question. The hog mollies, the trenches. And I love it because I'm old school too.
Right.
But here's the thing. I wonder how much are you hurting the potential of a guy like Barkley if you don't get the proper fortification on the line because he's not going to have enough room to do the jukes and the moves and the spectacular runs that he needs to do.
Well, I understand your point, and I think abstractly that makes sense. But I would respond to that by saying if Barkley is your guy, you know, and they decide that, you don't pass up a talent like Barkley just because you might not be truly fortified on the O-line. Now, you know, Quentin Nelson, my guess is that for a lot of teams in the draft, they'll look at Barkley and Quentin Nelson as the two cleanest players on their board.
And we agree with that.
Quentin Nelson is going to be number one, number two, or number three on people's boards. Now, we probably, all three of us, know he's not likely to be drafted in the top three, but he's going to be in the top three because guard is not viewed as a quote-unquote premium position.
Do you think it should be viewed that way?
That's a great question, and one I've been thinking about a lot. And to be honest with you, John, I don't have a brilliant answer to that. But, you know, the guy is unbelievable on tape. Unbelievable on tape. I mean, I've been, as far as college guys, I've probably only been doing it about 10 years, so I can't go back to, you know,
long
years
enough.
And years. And you'll remember, I know you'll remember, and I'm not saying that means you're old. But
yeah,
I was
it does.
Talking,
it's okay.
But
it's
I was
okay.
talking to Bill Polian.
He tells me I'm old all the time.
And the first name Bill Polian came up with when we were talking about Quentin Nelson was John Hanna.
Oh, you're kidding me.
Wow.
And John Hanna?
And I remember him, too, because I'm old.
He was with the Patriots, John.
Shut up.
And you know, when Bill Polian mentioned that name, obviously I didn't think of that immediately watching Nelson because that's a long time ago. But I remember John Hanna very well, coming out of Alabama, an All-Pro, a Hall of Famer, you know, one of the great guards ever in the history of the NFL. And just to consider that is even a comparison. But Quentin Nelson is that kind of player. So it's a hard question. I think the question you're asking, and I don't have a great answer myself, but that will be a team-specific question. Mm-hmm. There might be some teams that say, you know what, this guy is, as a guard, a game-changing kind of player, and he's worth taking it, you know, two, three, whatever it is.
You know what's interesting about this, though, Greg? We're talking about guys who would be maybe one, two, or three on the top of everybody's boards, and we're not talking about a quarterback, yet everybody seems to believe that the Cleveland Browns, who are dying for a quarterback,
have to take
a quarterback.
Well, and that gets into that whole conversation about the importance of the position and the fact that teams often take the position as opposed to the player because the position supersedes the player because there's this belief, which obviously has merit, that you can't win in this league unless you have a great quarterback. Mm-hmm. And so teams draft quarterbacks. Now, my guess would be that not many teams would have a quarterback as their number one player on their board in this draft. But that doesn't mean that a quarterback's not going to be taken at one or at four or at five, whatever. I don't know the draft order right in my head.
Right.
But it wouldn't surprise me if there were four or five quarterbacks taken by the time we got to pick 20.
Oh, absolutely. Wow. No, I think there could be four in the top 10. I don't think that's out of the question.
Yeah.
Where do you have this group of quarterbacks in terms of, I know you don't do a quote-unquote big board, but how do you compare, you know, the upside and the talent level of these quarterbacks to a guy like Barkley, to a guy like Nelson, or even a Chubb or Fitzpatrick, two other guys I think a lot of teams have near the top of their
boards? It's an eye of the beholder thing with the quarterbacks because the way coaches think is they think about how a quarterback fits in my scheme. Because the difference between scouts and coaches is scouts speak mostly in terms of traits and measurables. Coaches think in terms of scheme adaptability because coaches coach what they know. Pat Shurmur's coming in and he has a scheme. He has a pass game approach. He has pass game concepts. So he looks at a quarterback and thinks, okay, what quarterback fits what I want to do? Now, there's always a transcendent quarterback here and there. I'm not sure there's one in this draft. My guess is the guy people would think is the closest to that would be Darnold.
I agree.
But, like, for instance, I don't think Darnold is as good a prospect as Carson Wentz when he came out of North Dakota State.
I think that's probably fair.
So, you know, Darnold is because he's 6'4", 225, and can move, I think people view him as the likely top guy. But to me, he's not a transcendent talent. The way I would talk about Darnold, I think he's fascinating, he's tantalizing, he's exciting, but he's not a can't-miss kind of guy to me.
Well, you mentioned scheme and fit. You know what Pat Shurmur likes to run, and I think he made some adjustments with the Vikings last year.
Which is
more
coaching,
power run,
that's great.
Throwing down the field. He adjusts to his talent. What a novel concept. You like to see that from coaches.
Right.
From this quarterback group, what player do you think fits best with what Pat Shurmur likes to do?
Eli Manning.
You know, I think he could go a number of ways because look what he did with Case Keenum last year in Minnesota. And I think you could look at Case Keenum and think that that really helped a Baker Mayfield when you look at the draft. Because Mayfield is not a run-around guy, contrary to popular opinion. When I watch these quarterbacks, I watch five or six full games, I watched all third downs, and I watched all 15-plus yard plays because I wanted to see how they made their good plays.
Yeah.
And with Baker Mayfield, he maybe had 125 15-plus yard completions. Only six or seven of them were run-around improvisational plays. He played within the structure of the offense, mm-hmm. and I think a lot of people would be surprised by that if you don't know a lot about him, if you just sort of read what's out there.
And by the way, I think that offense had more NFL-style reads than people give it credit for,
so, you know, to me, you could look at what he did with Case Keenum. That helps Baker Mayfield. You could also look at, you know, what his background has been with some West Coast methodology because he's been in that,
of course,
you know, system as well. And, you know, with that guy, who would fit, you know, Josh Rosen would certainly fit that. You know, and again, I can't speak to the personality stuff, so I don't want to go there.
We're talking because, on the field only.
But, I mean, Josh Rosen is a very refined quarterback in terms of his subtleties and discipline with the position. He plays with a sense of timing and rhythm. Normally that translates to the league. You know, I look at a Josh Rosen and I think of the Matt Ryans, I think of the Jared Goffs, I think of those kinds of players. There's a sense of discipline and rhythm to his game.
Let me flip it to defense if I can, Greg.
Sure.
Because I think most people believe that Chubb is the highest-rated defensive player on most boards. He's a defensive end, a pass rusher. I get it. But Fitzpatrick is a pretty unique player out of Alabama. How high could he go?
See, that's a great question, Paul, because think of it this way. He's played at multiple positions in college, okay? Mm-hmm. Yet, when you get to the NFL and a team puts in its defense, he's going to have to play somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
As a you know, in your base defense, where is he going to play? And I think that's the first question you have to start with. You know, when they line up, when Betcher comes in, and by the way, I love that hire, by the way. Mm-hmm. But when Betcher comes in and starts putting in his defense, and most teams start with their base defense, where's Minkah Fitzpatrick going to line up? Is he a corner or is he a safety?
I mean, he barely played boundary corner, right, last year for Alabama. Yeah. He was mostly safety and slot, right?
So is he a safety or is he a corner?
I think he's a safety, but, you know, in the fluid type of system that Betcher runs, which, by the way, was the next question I want to ask you as we got away from the draft.
Right.
I think he's primarily a safety, but he's going to probably play at least three positions.
Okay. So let's say he plays safety. Nothing wrong with that. Safety is a very important position in today's NFL, and clearly Fitzpatrick has the multidimensional skill set that he can play, do anything that is required of an NFL safety.
Yes.
Now, when you get to your sub-package, okay, and Betcher plays both nickel and dime, where is he going to play? He could be your slot corner. He did that really well in college.
Mm-hmm.
And that, to me, is an overlooked position because teams play out of some form of sub, nickel or dime, probably 70-75% of the snaps. So that's almost more of your base defense than your base defense.
That's true.
So, you know, Fitzpatrick is a multidimensional guy. He's a really good player. And from what I understand, he is just an amazing kid.
Yeah.
So, I mean,
Landon Collins has told us.
Yeah, and I'm sure he knows him well.
He does.
Yeah. I mean, they were together for a couple years.
Exactly.
You know, and Minkah Fitzpatrick, you know, I've heard stories that Saban doesn't normally get close to players, but he's close with Minkah Fitzpatrick.
Really? Interesting.
Because the kid is just an unbelievable kid. And, you know, so I think that kind of player is really valuable in today's NFL, particularly in a James Betcher defense, because I don't know how much you know about it or have had a chance to look at it, but he is really multiple.
Oh, yeah.
He does a lot of different things. He likes certain kinds of players to be able to do a lot of different things. You know, he's not one of those old school, let's rush four and let's play zone.
Oh, that's for sure.
You know, I mean, he does an awful, awful lot. And I think a guy like Minkah Fitzpatrick clearly fits that.
I saw some plays last year where he had four safeties on the field. Two were at the linebacker spot and two guys were deep.
Well, which raises the question about how he sees Landon Collins. Is Landon Collins mm-hmm. Deion Buchanan for him, or is Landon Collins still going to be a pure safety? But I guess we'll find out.
And Vernon's Chandler Jones for him now, too. He's so fluid with everything he does.
Yep.
I mean, I'm going to get creative at some point once the season starts and give that defense a nickname, because it's going to have to be something about fluid, because he's constantly moving guys around.
Yep.
Nothing stationary with him.
No, he's really good, does a lot of things, and I'll be real anxious to see, you know, what he does with the talent that he has. I mean, obviously, he had a true shutdown corner in Arizona, which allowed him to do a lot of things, because you could line up Patrick Peterson mm-hmm. and say, You're my guy. Now, is Janoris Jenkins a free agent?
No, he's back. He's back.
He's not quite Patrick Peterson, but I think he can be that guy.
He can play the role, sure.
I think he can line up and be a true man corner and be your quote-unquote shutdown corner, whatever that means. But, you know, he can do that.
Question in terms of Jason Pierre-Paul. Do you see him fitting into that Betcher defense more as the hand-in-the-dirt 3-4 defensive end when they're in their, you know, four linebacker situation?
Well, Chandler Jones for them, who does both. Okay. Who lines up with his hand on the ground sometimes and lines up in a two-point stance other times.
Do you think both he and Vernon will rotate in those spots a little bit?
Well, Vernon can do it, too. I mean, I think you have two guys with the kind of flexibility and versatility that Betcher likes. But I think, you know, the body type of Pierre-Paul and Chandler Jones are very similar. They're long, lanky, fluid, flexible guys, benders, you know, which is why they're good pass rushers. So I think that he has two guys in Pierre-Paul and Vernon who can kind of fit that role.
I need to ask you about Mike Shula because, Greg, to be perfectly frank with you, I haven't studied a lot of the Panthers' offense over the last several years. I know he's the quarterback's coach, then the OC. And with the Giants, his OC role is yet to really be defined, at least in my mind, because we don't know exactly how much Pat Shurmur is going to do. But what would you say the characteristics are of Mike Shula as he comes into the Giant organization?
Paul, I'll answer it this way. I don't think that what happened in Carolina will have much bearing on what the Giants do because that was very specific to Cam Newton.
Right.
So I think it's going to be Pat's offense. I don't know. What I don't know is if there was a connection with Pat and Shula before this. You know, maybe they've worked together. Maybe the
I never heard of one. Okay, I think so it was more the Gettleman connection.
Right. Oh, that could have been it. Okay, yes, you're right. I should have thought of that immediately. But I think it's Pat's offense. And they certainly don't have a quarterback, assuming it's Eli, who's going to do what they did in Carolina.
You didn't see him dance in the commercial?
Yeah, that was pretty good, by the way. That was really good. But, yeah, so it's not. It's going to be Pat's offense. It's not going to be Shula's offense. Now, depending, you know, I'm sure Shula has some ideas, and you always like to be able to tweak things, but it's not. They're not going to do what they did in Carolina.
Great. Good stuff. We appreciate the time. Thank you so much.
Appreciate it, guys. Really enjoyed it.
Enjoy the rest of the combine. Yeah.
Thanks, Greg.
We'll try to catch up with Greg before the draft and maybe in free agency as well. We'll be right back with more. Paul Schwartz in the New York Post joins us, and we'll take some calls as well on Big Blue Kickoff Live on Giants.com right after this.
It's always important to give back to the community simply because without their support, we wouldn't be the Giants. The community always supported the Giants in everything we do, and our fans are always going to be behind us, and you always have to give back because giving back one time may help that little kid be motivated, and they are the future, so we have to give back and motivate younger people to become successful and do positive things in their lives.
Coaching all around me. I think we have a huge responsibility with the platform we have to really reach out to people in all walks of life. And, you know, I personally have a passion for kids and dealing with kids.
C-D-E-D.
People want to be around athletes, want to see what we have to say, and I want to be one of the guys that give them something that they can really take.
Good job. Good job.
He's under pressure and he gets sacked.
Individual rolls up.
Snap is good at kick.
Oh, it's right in the block.
Jason Pierre-Paul, JPP.
I think when he plays with leverage, he's as powerful a defensive lineman as today. He does everything well.
Pass intercepted. He threw it by Jason Pierre-Paul and he runs it in for the touchdown.
You play like him and we'll go places.
We're back here on Big Blue Kickoff Live. John Schmelk, Paul Dottino, and now Paul Schwartz from the New York Post joins us. Man in the middle. Paul, you've been kind of canvassing the people that are here for Shurmur and Gettleman day one. We had the prospects out on day number two. We talked a lot about what Pat Shurmur and Gettleman said. Anything jump out at you from what you heard from the prospects yesterday?
Oh, from the prospects?
Yeah.
What jumped out at me, I spent a lot of time at Saquon Barkley's media session, and I mean, nothing really jumped out at me because I was not surprised by anything I heard or saw.
He's very polished.
Nobody is a perfect prospect, but he's as close to a perfect prospect as there is, I would think. I mean, what I think anyone who wants to nitpick about him, it's just nitpicking because you have categories, right? We all have weaknesses and strengths. So you have to put something in the weaknesses department. You have to. You can't leave it blank. It's like a teacher said, right? Mm-hmm. If you leave it blank, you get points off. So you have to say, well, he doesn't run as north-south as you like, or, you know, sometimes he dances too much. Yeah, so you write that stuff in there, and you say, okay, and you forget it. You know, he's a bench press freak. He's vertical today was great. I mean, he'll run great, I'm sure. So my takeaway as far as him was – you know, he's worthy of the number one or two pick. I don't think there's any question about it. And, you know, I listened to some of the offensive linemen speak, and I think they're a physically impressive group. I mean, some of these guys look like tackles. I don't know if they are.
Mike McGlinchey looks like a tackle.
Well, he looks like yes. But the thing about Mike McGlinchey is he looks like a tackle from 1953, right? he's big, but he's got that square head,
yes.
And he just looks
yes.
like the kind of guy you say,
yes.
he played for Iowa. Okay, I know he played for Notre Dame, and he's going to go bang. He's big and tall, but some of these tackles are really statuesque guys. Maybe almost too much. Really big, lean guys.
You know, that will make Dave Gettleman very happy. I mean, because there seems to be I don't want to say a plethora, but there are certainly more offensive line prospects in this draft than there have been in the last several years. And one of the common threads we heard from these guys yesterday is that they're more lunch pail kind of guys, mean streak kind of guys who have that kind of intangible. Although, quite frankly, I understand Orlando Brown did not do so well in his drills this morning.
He's still running.
Know. Yeah,
he hasn't finished. He hasn't finished the 40.
But you
yet.
Get the point.
Yes, I mean, I think Dave Gettleman has a word for that, doesn't he?
Hog molly.
Yes, he has. And I'm disappointed because on Wednesday he only said it once.
He did Aww. Only say it once.
He only said hog mollies once, and that is not acceptable to Dave Gettleman. And it's something he's got to clean it up. He's got to, as Tom Coughlin would do, right? He's got to
yes.
let's get the hog molly references up a little bit. Yes, this sounds like it's a pretty good – now, I think it's more of an interior
– more guards than tackles. Totally agree with
draft,
that.
Draft, but you know what?
And more right tackles than left tackles.
Well, that's always seems to be the point because if there's, you know, every 5 or 6 or 7 years, there's a couple of great left tackle prospects. And then where do they go? 3, 4, 5. They go really high. That's – everyone wants them. But you know what? I'm almost tired of hearing this with the Giants. You know, I'm tired of hearing with the Giants that – well, the offensive linemen in college, they stand up and they play this. Yes, I get that. Unless the Giants want to create their own developmental league for offensive linemen, this is the pool you're getting from.
That's true.
You have to find them and you have to cultivate them, and it can't be a 4-year process. Find them and get them. So this year we know Eli's there. Odell will be healthy. Maybe they take a running back. You know, they'll probably take a quarterback with the first round pick, but you have to fix the offensive line, and you can't do that by signing 4 guys in free agency. You got to find guys in the draft who can play right away.
All right, Paul, let's move on from the draft. We'll get to the Giants itself, then we'll take some calls with you as well. We have 3 guys on the line for you. Between now and the start of free agency, would you expect any additional roster moves, whether it's, you know, re-signing somebody that maybe they have the rights to or trying to create more cap space somehow?
Yeah, I would expect it. Now, we asked Dave Gettleman that. I think I asked him that on Wednesday, and he said, you know, we're under the cap. We don't have to do anything, but there's under and there's under, right? $22 million under versus $30 million versus $40 million. The more is the better. So, yes, I mean, this is a team that was 3-13. I don't think you can look at this roster and say, you know, there's a few guys who you're not going to cut and are not expendable, but there are guys. I mean, I think Dominic Rodgers-Cromartie is a guy that you have to look at. He makes a lot of money. He's not an every-down player. He was suspended once last year, so I think he's a guy who you can get $5 million from right on the cap, whether you ask him to take a pay cut or I think maybe more likely you just cut him at some point. And there are others. I think there are others. And will they sign some of their own free agents? Yeah, they might. You know, if James Betcher, you know, I know you guys were talking about him before. If James Betcher says, look, Kennard is a guy that can fit in beautifully in my scheme, maybe you sign him. But I don't know if you have to do that this week or next week either.
Of course.
You can wait on a guy like that.
Yeah, you know, it's funny, Paul, because this is so different in that the Giants have a new defensive coordinator, a new offensive coordinator, and a new head coach. We haven't seen that triple around these parts in an awful long time. In fact, they even have a new GM. It's 4 huge, significant pieces at the top of the pipeline that have been changed in 1 year. That does make this somewhat more unpredictable than ever before.
Yes. Now, you can go by, look, Dave Gettleman was a general manager in the league, you know, the last, you know, 4 of the last 5 years. So you can look at his track record. Dave Gettleman was a personnel guy with the Giants, so you can look and see what he kind of liked. But Dave Gettleman was not the guy who signed these guys. He said, I think Sean O'Hara can be our center.
Right.
I think Antonio Pierce can be not an outside linebacker, a middle linebacker. Ernie, of course, he liked it, and they move forward with that. You know, he wasn't making the decisions with the Giants.
And no one knows what guys he recommended, then maybe they didn't sign.
Of course. That's why when people said, look, it's the first time in 39 years the Giants go into a season with a new general manager and a new head coach. Mm-hmm. That's several generations, right? And look, we can look at Pat Shurmur and say, when he was in Cleveland, this is what he liked. That's a whole different ball game. So I agree, it is very unpredictable, and also I think the Giants this year want to be unpredictable. I think they want to be buttoned down,
especially at number two.
And yes, now you could say, well, why do they have to be so secretive at number two? There's only one guy they can't get. Well, there's trade downs possibilities. There's, you know what, they pick number two, and they may have a guy number one that they don't want to see the Browns take at number one. So, you know, you have to be coy with this stuff. You know, I mean, it's not a one player draft, but if you have one guy you love, if there's one quarterback there they love, or if they look at Barkley and said, we're happy with Eli, we're happy with Webb, Barkley's the best player in the draft, we want him. If the Browns take him at number one, now you got to go to plan B.
Well, you know, I think that was interesting when they talked about the draft, Paul. They didn't just say all our options are open. Dave Gettleman and Pat Shurmur gave legitimate reasons why they would go quarterback. Why they'd pick even Quentin Nelson, why'd they go Barkley, why they would trade down. They gave legitimate, logical reasons for any of 4 to 5 different paths with this second pick for that very reason. I don't even think they know internally what they're going to do yet.
Well, the one thing I might disagree with you on that is I agree. You know, when people say, who are you hearing they're going to draft? They don't know who they're going to draft.
Yes.
You know, they don't know that. Mm-hmm. But I think they have a pretty good idea if they're going to go quarterback or not go quarterback.
That's probably fair.
And I think this draft for the Giants stacks up to two things. Quarterback, everybody else. You know what I mean? And that's the way you look at it.
I think everybody else, by the way, is headlined by Barkley. If you talk to the people around here.
He's been the star of the combine so far. But, I mean, I'm saying I could sit here now with you guys for a half hour and make a case for the defensive end.
Sure you can. Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Right. I can make a case that when the last two Super Bowls they won, was it Eli Manning, you know, had 17 and 21 points in those Super Bowl games. What was the key to those games? Putting Tom Brady on his back. You have JPP, who might only have a year left. Olivier Vernon's there. This franchise has always stockpiled defensive ends. So we could talk forever about that guy.
Logical choice.
Chubb. Yes, Chubb. No question from NC State.
You can make the argument for Minkah Fitzpatrick. You can make it for Quentin Nelson. You can make it for any of these guys.
I think Quentin Nelson is a harder. I mean, I think taking the guard at number one.
Gettleman tried, though.
At two.
He tried to make
at
that argument.
At two. At two, taking a guard, I think, is, you know, you can say, well, he can be a generational guard. I understand that. I mean, if you ask me right now, and Dave Gettleman put this standard up there, right? He said, the guy you pick at number two, if he's worthy of that pick, you have to think of him as a Hall of Fame potential player.
Well, if he's Art Shell, is he worth it?
So I'm saying, if you ask me right now, you have to put $500 on one player being in the Hall of Fame from this draft, okay? I might put most of my money on Nelson.
So would I.
Because a running back is, you worry about Barkley's great, but you worry about durability, you worry about scheme. You don't worry about any of that with Nelson. You worry about, could he be a great player for, you know, 7, 8, 9 years?
All right. Now let me turn that question around. $500 on who do you think will be the most spectacular game changer, and that's going to be Barkley.
Oh, that's Barkley. And
which is the problem.
And we've seen in the last few years, you know, this whole thing, you know, Dave Gettleman said this myth about you can't take a running back high. I mean, we don't have to go back 20 years. Ezekiel Elliott and Fournette were both drafted at number four. Are they difference makers for their teams? Their whole team aura is changed because of those guys. Now you say, well, the Cowboys had a great offensive line. I understand that. If they take Barkley at number one, the Giants aren't going to go, we're done. They know the offensive line has to be fixed. They know there are things they have to address, but a special running back, I mean, I understand you can do it by committee and you can get guys like Kamara and you can get guys in later rounds and it can be terrific, but Barkley is Barkley, and his bust factor is so minuscule.
It's low. I mean, his low end is being a split carry guy that's an elite third down back. Basically, his low end is Alvin Kamara. Like, if you look at him, like, if he's Alvin Kamara, that's probably the low end of what people think he's going to be.
People say Blair Thomas. They say Kajana Carter.
And now I remember them well.
That's just because of Penn State.
But they were also guys who were drafted very high and were not good. And believe me, if we went back in time and we're at the, nobody was saying, well, Kajana Carter, I think he's going to be a bust.
But I think the difference with that, though, is that Barkley, we know, is going to be a dynamic receiver. Based on what he did in college, we've seen that from him. So even if he doesn't turn into that, you know, grinded out Ezekiel Elliott type, you know you're at least going to be able to use him in half your sets when you're throwing the football as a guy that can make plays in space.
Well, Dave Gettleman with the Panthers picked Christian McCaffrey number 8.
Right.
And Christian McCaffrey is a gifted pass receiver, but Christian McCaffrey's total running back package and Saquon Barkley's are apples and oranges.
Yeah. No, absolutely.
Apples and oranges. So if he's worth the 8th pick, this guy's worth the 2nd pick.
Interesting point, Paul. Let me ask you this. You know, how much would it take for you to move out of the 2?
And how far down would you be willing to go?
I know you like that theory. I understand
I
that.
Like and, it. And, I don't know that they can get the price to make it worth it.
Well, I don't think it's going to work. I think they see the number 2 pick as a generational player, and they want to take that player. And if it's a quarterback, as Dave Gettleman said about the number, you can't get too cute. You know, you can't get too cute. If someone wants to give you a package, if you got to move down to 4 or 5, and someone gives you more than what the standard is for those, mm-hmm. I'd say you certainly consider it. But they're not going to do it if they want a quarterback, and they're not going to do it if they want Barkley. That's all there is to it, because you're not going to get them lower down. And you know, we haven't talked a lot about the quarterbacks, but, you know, I think the odds are still very high they're going to take a quarterback. I would bet, you know, this $500, this mythical $500 we keep on betting. I don't know where you think I'm bankrolling.
Well, I was going to say, because you just have spare change in your pocket right now.
And just memo to my editors, if there's a $500 thing on my expense account, that's what all these bets are doing, okay? It's going to be said incidentals, okay? But, you know, if I would have to put money on it, I think a quarterback's going to be hard to pass up. I really do. I just think they're setting themselves for the long haul. Dave Gettleman's in his first year. Shermer's in his first year. It's not like these are guys just hanging on and they got to stick 1 year out of this, you know?
And final question before we take a call with you, Paul. On the quarterbacks, and we're not going to ask you to break down these guys and, you know, what kind of players they are, but based on almost personality partly on the type of guys that Dave Gettleman likes and based on, you know, what we know about Pat Shermer, which guy or guys do you think really fit or you think really don't fit based on where the Giants are now, keeping Eli for at least one more year, knowing where they want to go as a franchise, and who else is in that locker room?
Sam Darnold, I think, is the guy who fits, in my opinion. First of all, I think Shermer wants a guy who can move.
I agree, and Darnold can move.
Everybody wants a guy who can move now. That's all there is to it. The guy can move. You know, people say, boy, Baker Mayfield makes so many plays out of the pocket. Darnold makes more plays out of the pocket than Baker Mayfield
He
does.
Might.
Allen makes a lot of plays out of the pocket,
And by the way,
too.
We just had Greg Cosell, and he said Mayfield made more plays in the pocket than out.
Yes. I mean, it's you know what? We stereotype guys all the time.
We do.
He's you know, Mayfield is 5'2", which is not. and he's Doug Flutie. No, he's not Doug Flutie. He's better in the pocket than out of the pocket.
Yes. That's
now, he can get out of the pocket. Darnold, now in that bowl game where he got devastated by Ohio State, right? Now,
yes.
how many NFL players did Ohio State have on defense there?
Probably half dozen at least.
Yeah. Okay.
Sure.
You know, they were tremendous.
Sure.
They were totally overmatched.
Absolutely.
Up front, USC.
Is that a preview of things to come?
Well, it better not be, because you want a guy being able to make plays out of the pocket but not running for your dear life. But he made a couple of throws. And, you know, look, he's getting killed. He's getting sacked. He's not completing the ball. And he said, dude, this guy's not worthy of the number 1 or number 2 pick. And then a couple of throws. We talked about this one. A couple of throws he got out, and I'm like, that is an NFL big-time throw.
He dropped a deep throw between a corner and safety for a touchdown in that game. You're just like, wow, that is an unbelievable throw.
Now, I know the Josh Allen thing. Josh Allen is, you know, Tarzan. There's no question about it. He's
like
Tarzan.
That.
He is. He's bigger than everybody. He's
That's
stronger
good.
Than everybody. He throws the ball longer. You know, I'm sure today that something's going to come out when they throw tomorrow, right? You know, he's going to throw the ball 85 yards or something, and people, you know, from his
right.
from his left knee or something, and people are going to go crazy. It just, you know what the strangest thing is that, you know, in our day we'd say, right, Paul, we're dating ourselves, right? But a guy would be scrambling, Mayfield, and we'd say, oh, he looks like Fran Tarkington.
Oh, my goodness.
Right?
Or Archie Manning.
Or somebody was Elway, or somebody was, you know, maybe Peyton, or somebody was, you know, guys in this niche.
Mm-hmm.
But And so all of a sudden now Josh Allen is Carson Wentz. Right? He's a bigger Carson Wentz.
I think his arm strength rivals, at least coming out of school at this age, rivals Aaron Rodgers and even before that Randall Cunningham.
No, he has one of the
who could really win.
He has one of the best arms we've seen coming out of college.
In years.
They also said his arm strength is like Jamarcus Russell's.
Well, that was Mayock. Yes.
Okay. You know, so
and
so.
I guarantee you Josh Allen's agents are sitting there like, "No, what are you doing?
Don't say that."
It's like which doesn't belong and why.
Exactly.
Like, I just think Josh Allen is it's like, what is your personality? Are you a gambler? Are you not a gambler? He is the biggest upside guy, but to me at number two.
Too risky.
He's a risky guy. But you say, I'm sure you could argue with me, well, wait a second. At number two, you have Eli Manning still here. You have Davis Webb still here.
He can develop, right?
You can conceivably say Josh Allen does not have to hit the field for 2 years. We're going to fine-tune him in our laboratory, and he already looks like Ivan Drago, right? He's already a monster.
Yeah.
Now we're going to fine-tune him in a year and a half, 2 years. Bring him out there.
I could say that, but I'm telling you not to take a quarterback.
Okay.
So I won't say
so
that.
So basically, in other words, we've made the case for about six or seven guys at two, which is great. Let's take a couple calls real quick. Let's go to Adam in Jersey. We'll take him first with Paul Schwartz. Adam, you're on Big Blue Kickoff Live. What's your question today, buddy?
Hey, John. Hey, Paul.
Hi.
Hey, B-Dot. How you guys doing?
Good.
Today, I'm just curious. All the media outlets, you too, Paul Schwartz, are talking about taking a quarterback. Yet, we have Eli Manning starting. So my question to you is, if we're winning now, we want to win now, why wouldn't we wait on the quarterback, take Saquon Barkley, and say, you know what, or Quentin Nelson. My guy is Quentin Nelson because I want to win, right? So you can plug and play him. I want my number two guy to plug and play. Well, I guess my question to you guys is, over the years, Pat Shurmur has all this documented tape of Davis Webb. Do you think, because he's lumped in with this group of quarterbacks, that he will be – you don't want him?
No, I said there isn't a lot of tape at Davis Webb.
Well, you know, he has a practice tape. You can tell the difference from April to December how he's come along, right, in practice. So I'm just trying to ask you guys, with this information and his college tape, do you think that that's going to be a factor in drafting? And if so, do you think Quentin Nelson could be the guy? Because if we're building the offensive line and we're telling Eli Manning we're going to win now, don't you guys think that it would be more beneficial to Eli in our career, in our chances of winning with a guy like Quentin Nelson, unlike Davis Webb? And my last point before I go is we have one of the toughest schedules in the NFL coming up, right? So what is the chances that we may be picking this early again next year? Just because.
Why would you say that?
No!
And first of all,
you're ahead. Be quiet.
Adam, first you said we're trying to win now, and then you're worried about picking two next year? You can't have both sides of the question.
2019 is so far away.
I want to start with the Davis Webb part of that question, Paul.
Okay.
What was your take on what Shurmur Gettleman said about him? Has we even talked about him with you yet? And Gettleman did say he was going to rate the quarterbacks in this class and compare them to what him and Shurmur know about.
Right. The one thing I think is a little bit convoluted is, you know, everyone says, well, there's not a lot of tape on Davis Webb. Well, wait a second.
It's college tape.
What? Yeah, but what are we looking at with the college players?
College tape.
You know less about those guys than you do Davis Webb.
Yeah, Davis Webb is building. Davis Webb has been in your building for a year.
Mm-hmm.
You know his character. You know his makeup. You know what he likes to eat for breakfast. You know his work ethic. You know all these things.
Mm-hmm.
So you're looking at him. To me, Davis Webb, you put him in, and you know, the scouts got to rate him. And they rate him with Rosen and Darnold and Allen and Mayfield. And you rate him with them, and then you say, okay, you know, Pat Shurmur said, I did a big makeup on him last year. And you know, I'm sure they had him as a low second, high third round pick. I mean, that seems to be the consensus.
That's fair.
Yeah, I think that's fair, sure.
I don't know, but that's fair.
I mean, the Giants had him as a low second, high third, I believe. You know, they kind of, you know, got him. They thought it was good value there. So now you're looking at that. So I'm sure they have these other quarterbacks rated as first-round picks. And so now you say, well, we got a year under our belt and this and that. So the one thing about Shurmur and Gettleman the other day, we're talking so highly about Davis Webb that I was a little concerned because I think they were trying to make it sound like, look, we got Eli and we got Davis Webb. We're pretty good here. And I don't think that's necessarily the case. I mean, I'm not saying they don't like those guys, and they will not take them. I'm just saying.
Well, they're also not going to say anything bad about a quarterback on their roster,
correct,
too. I mean, they're
correct.
Not going to go and do that.
And it behooves them to say good things about Davis Webb to keep the intrigue going.
See, I think the other thing. I think it keeps the intrigue going if they start telling people that we're really considered a quarterback, because the more people that think the Giants are going to take a quarterback,
that's a good point too.
Then the better price they could get in a potential trade.
there's also, you know, is Dave Gettleman a devious kind of guy? And I don't mean that in a negative way, you know, because Jerry Reese was, you know, Jerry Reese was not the kind of guy who did a lot of smoke screening. You know what I mean? And I think, you know, is Dave Gettleman going to be that kind of guy? He seems like a pretty much of a straight shooter to me, but he also has been in the business a long time and knows how to work political channels. So I think there's going to be a lot of stuff that we hear that we don't know if it's true or not.
Draft poker.
Paul, we appreciate the time, my friend.
Anytime, guys.
Paul Schwartz, New York Post. Rick Saratella, NFL Draft Bible, joins us next on Giants.com. Big Blue Kickoff Live. Stick with us.
It's Romeo Aquara. The best thing about the combine was being able to meet all the players I played with and against with in college, and just being surrounded by all these great athletes, trying to take the next step in the professional career, hoping to make it in the NFL, get drafted by a team or sign with the team, whatever the case may be. But just an awesome experience being able to practice and meet the coaches, team owners, GMs, and good luck to all the guys out there participating in the combine this weekend. Enjoy it. It's a long week, but at the same time, you got to enjoy yourself.
Left. Caught by Ingram over the defender. Touchdown, yes.
That's a jump ball, and Ingram went up and got it.
I definitely see myself as a total package, and definitely a threat downfield and vertical passing game.
That's why I call him a hybrid. Athletically, he's superior.
That's what these fans can look forward to, that Ingram gives you a winning effort.
Back here on Big Blue Kickoff Live, John Schmelk, Paul Dottino, Rick Saratella, NFL Draft Bible, friend of the program. We're going to take a couple calls with, if you don't mind,
yeah,
as well.
So we'll
get to those in a little bit. But we've talked a lot about the real top of the draft here, but I know you dive deep. So we're going to challenge you a little bit here, okay? Talking about day two picks, second and third round, where do you think you're going to find the most value from a position standpoint, depth of the draft, top of round two, top of round three?
Well, I think you take a look at the running backs first and foremost. This is a really extremely deep class, and everybody's talking a lot about Saquon Barkley. Is that a fit for the Giants at number two? I think you can find some very comparable running backs, day two, day three, a Rashard Penny from San Diego State.
So you don't think the drop-off is that steep?
I don't think it's that significant, and I don't think that the running back position makes enough of an impact to be a game changer. I would not invest a second overall pick on a running back, despite the previous year's success, because I can find a guy like a Sony Michel from Georgia. I can find a guy like Penny that we mentioned about.
Ronald Jones, USC.
And every year you get guys here that, you know, even the Bears running back a couple years ago that went on like day three. And Jordan Howard, I think it was, and just came out like a gangbuster. Kareem Hunt, another perfect example. And I just, you know, I think running back position, I can get an undrafted guy. If you find a guy to fit their scheme, I mean, you can get an undrafted guy and be comparable, not as explosive as a Saquon Barkley, but a guy that has a comparable career over the length of a period of time.
I got a running back who fits the description, and I got to ask you about him because Jeff Beagles will kick my butt if I don't, and that's Walton out of Miami, who had the injury history, claimed yesterday at his media session that all the teams ask him first and foremost about the knee and that he's fine.
Yeah, I mean, that's a guy that's going to turn some heads here this week, and I think he's been under the radar because of that injury, but you talk about a speed burner, a 4.4 speed guy that's just flying right, really under the radar, and that's what I'm talking about. He's going to probably go day three because of the injury, and we don't know what the medical is going to discover here, but, I mean, there's a perfect example. Ralph Webb, who's not even invited here from Vanderbilt, I mean, this guy has just been great in the SEC. He's not even in Indianapolis. He's going to outperform guys. Chase Edmonds from Fordham, who was injured this previous season, but before that, he had a day two grade coming into the year. That's a guy that's going to go day three undrafted and maybe start at the next level.
You're dropping a Fordham guy on Paul Dottino. You're going to get him excited over there.
I mean, you know, Rose Hill, baby. I'm all in.
What other positions besides running back do you like in that top round two, top round three, where you're going to get a lot of juice out of them?
Well, there's 70 defensive backs here, and I think that speaks volumes to not only what we saw last year's draft. I think more defensive backs drafted than, you know, the previous years, like we've seen never before, and you got explosive playmakers there, whether it's, you know, Derwin James, Minkah Fitzpatrick, Joshua Jackson from the Iowa kid. There's so much depth at the cornerback position. I think that you're going to see guys there probably, again, drafted day two, day three, that are going to go on and start at the next level.
All right. Now, we know you specialize, again, in going deep. So I'm going to ask you about two local guys. They're not necessarily going to be starters in this league. In fact, maybe they may project 2-3 years down the road. But I know you were talking to a couple of them at the table the other day. Offensive tackles, Toth from Army and Sanat from Wagner. These guys are great stories, if nothing else.
Yeah, I mean, Toth, he came out like a gangbuster. I think it was the East-West Shrine game or whatever all-star game he participated in and just, you know, was barreling over guys, really impressive, really strong.
And then he got invited to the Senior Bowl off that performance.
Right. And so, you know, there's a guy that is really, you know, if you can continue to, I say, you know, hit the draft triple play with the all-star circuit, the combine, and the pro day, you know, teams are really going to have to think twice about, you know, do we want to wait on this guy? What is his military commitment? Do we want to be patient because the rules have changed?
And the reports are that it would have to be a two-year commitment, correct?
So, you know, there's a guy, you know, probably maybe day two, day three, probably day three, you invest in a guy, probably a contender that can be patient and be willing to wait like the Patriots. I think they've done that in the past. Mm-hmm. I think they had a long snapper from the military school. Now,
yeah, Belichick does those things.
Yeah, he does. Well, you know, he's got the background. With
yes, he does.
And he also has a job security to wait around for a couple of years if he wants to, which also helps.
Right. So you get a little bit more leeway when you're Billy Belichick. But, you know, Sanat, we were just watching him here on the monitor, you know, before I came on. And, you know, he's got to improve. He's got some work. He's got to improve his technique. He obviously has the athleticism. I think, you know, he's a lump of clay right now. And scouts and coaches are going to have to mold that. And, you know, for me, the biggest concern is, like, why didn't you win the left tackle starting job? And if you're that good, why were you playing right tackle? And I think watching it on the monitor here, we saw a little bit of stiffness in the hips. And, you know, he's just going to have to work on continuing to expand that flexibility.
Linebackers, Giants need them. New defensive scheme, they're going to a 3-4. James Betcher loves fast linebackers. Taking Roquan Smith and Trim Edmonds out of the mix because we all assume that they're going to be gone in the top 15. Who else could be there for the Giants if you're looking for a speedy linebacker that fits in James Betcher's scheme?
That Boise State kid, Vander Esch, I mean, he's going to be skyrocketing, I think.
Will he last to 34?
Yeah, I think so. I think
okay.
Yeah, I do.
Other people
that.
Have told me that they think he might jump into the 20s.
Yeah, we've heard that.
Well, you know, and I think, you know, Indianapolis might dictate some of that. If he mm-hmm. comes and jumps through the gymnasium and blows the roof off of Lucas Oil Stadium, then he very well could be a first-round pick. But I think the depth at linebacker position, and listen, Giants need to get back to having these linebackers because that's back in the day, as you guys know, that's what their bread and butter was on
sure.
defense. So we need some linebackers. We need some playmakers here and, you know, some guys flying around with their hair on fire.
One more quick one before we go to the phones. Shaquem Griffin, the one-handed linebacker, who a lot of people think can play despite his handicap and is going to be drafted maybe even, could it be third round? Is that possible?
Is it possible? Yeah, nothing surprises me anymore in the draft process, but I think he's more of a day three guy. He was a late invite to the combine. He wasn't on that initial invite list.
What position, by the way, do you think he's going to play?
I think he's like a joker. You know, I like him as a rover position, maybe strong safety, maybe outside linebacker, maybe a honey badger type of player. I think he kind of fits that mold.
Do you think fourth or fifth round for him, you're thinking, or could he go to 6-7?
I think anywhere between 5-7.
5-7?
Okay, a little lower than what some of our other guys thought.
All right, let's take a couple of calls here with Rick. 3 draft questions, let's get him in, and then we'll have Jeff Risden at the top of the hour. Let's go to Travis in Queens. He will lead us off. Hey, Travis, what's going on, pal? Good to talk to you.
Hey, fellas, how you guys doing?
Hi.
Good. Question, so I want to know, like, what options would be better? For the second pick, do you go Barkley? And then second round, you go Will Hernandez if he's there, or do you go Nelson, and then you go second round running back?
Good question. What do you think, Rick?
Well, you're heading in the right direction. It's got to be offensive line. We, you know, Jerry Reese did not address this position the last couple drafts, and it's been frustrating. It's been frustrating to the coaches. It's been frustrating to the fans. It's been frustrating to my eyeballs. So if you're going to stay there at number two, you got to take Quentin Nelson. But, you know, there's too much equity there to stay there because you don't need a quarterback. If they stay there, there's no doubt about it in my mind. They will definitely find a trade partner that's willing to move up and take a quarterback. There's too much equity, too much value. you can trade down and take a guy like Isaiah Wynn, take a kid from the UTEP school, Will Hernandez. You can probably get him if you move back in the later part of the first round, top of the second round. If you're going to stay there, take Quentin Nelson. Safest pick in the draft, but you have to trade down. There's no doubt about
so
it.
So if they don't go quarterback, you think trade down's the way to go?
You have to.
All right, interesting.
Well, you should have been answering a lot of the people on my Twitter, because when I suggested that back in December, I got so much heat.
Now, Rick, let me ask you this, though.
And I'm still riding that, by the way.
Based on the depth of the class, do you think going in, let's say, for example, one trade that's been mentioned and rumored out there is the Bills. They've got two first-round picks. They have multiple picks in other rounds as well. Do you think it's dangerous to move that far down based on the depth of the class, or do you think you can find, you know, you never find sure things in the draft, but guys that you have good feelings about in that early 20s area?
Yeah, I think, you know, there's probably, I can count on one hand how many franchise-type players there are in this year's draft.
Who do you think they are, by the way?
Oh, I think, you know, Derwin James is one.
How about Minka?
Minka Fitzpatrick is another. He can play six positions. I think Josh Rosen is my guy. You know, I think he's a franchise signal caller.
Chubb?
Chubb would be in the mix for certain. And, you know, Calvin Ridley, I think, is head and shoulders above the rest of the receivers. He's my only first-round lock in terms of the wide receiver position.
You know, we didn't mention Chubb, the running back, before when we were talking about ball carriers, and that's a power back who might fit in well with the Giants.
Yeah, he lost a little bit of explosiveness off that injury, but I think he bounced back well enough to be in that day two consideration. But I like his teammate a little bit better. Sonny Michel, I think, is more explosive. And
he
now
is.
There's some fumble questions there. You know, every 54 carries, he fumbles the ball. So I'm a little bit concerned about that. But I think, you know, Chubb is going to be a guy that I see him in the day three range. And
wow.
I think he's going to be a timeshare back at the next level.
All right, let's go to Joe in Pennsylvania. He's got a question for Rick. Joe, go ahead, pal.
My statement, and I just want to say from in the 2004 draft we were talking about yesterday, I got cut off there. We got Eli Manning, and you know who we did have a second round
Chris
pick.
Sneed.
You know who we got? Chris Sneed.
Yes.
Correct.
Yes, so, we had a momentary brain lock. That's okay, Joe.
Oh, okay. I'm saying that's great. My question is, before you cut me off, I'm saying we get a tackle or a running back. But is it more important, we got Webb there, and to take a quarterback to ensure that we have Eli's backup, because we are up that high, and you have to pay a king's ransom to get up that high?
And look,
is that more important than taking another player to make sure we have Eli's backup that we can wait? Because between Webb and that quarterback gives us a 50% more chance of hitting on it. Wouldn't you agree?
Now, Joe, you know, Joe, I think that's a good point. And, Rick, let's ask you about Davis Webb, because you obviously did a big workup on him last year. What do you think his chances are based on what you saw from him in college? This is really most of the tape that we have to look at. He didn't do a whole lot on the field for the Giants last year to be Eli's successor, or are the odds of the guys you see this year that much higher?
What's not to like about Davis Webb? I don't understand this. I mean, you invested a third-round pick on him. His work ethic is through the roof. He's
just
a sponge.
Keep reading off of my script, because we are agreeing on everything. You understand that.
He just absorbs. I mean, he's like the first guy there, last guy to leave the building. Everybody who comes in contact with this guy is just so impressed through the roof.
You put pork in the meatballs, too?
Hey, oh,
I'm
of
just
course.
Checking.
Yeah, of course.
Okay.
Yeah, three meatballs, of course. But, you know, I mean, what's not to like about this guy? I mean, he's got it all. He's just comparable to Jared Goff, in my opinion. And you saw Goff struggle his first year and then rebound with McVay. And I think it's all about development, man. Listen. These quarterbacks, even in the first round, Baker Mayfield, Josh Allen, even Lamar Jackson, these guys, they're no sure thing. It's about the coaching staff. You got to get a guy like a Baker Mayfield. You get a moving pocket like a Marcus Mariota. You got to build the system around them. And, you know, I'll give you Kyle Lauletta from Richmond. This guy's getting Jimmy Garoppolo comparisons. You could probably have him second, third, maybe fourth round and develop a guy. But I'm a firm believer in the Bill Walsh philosophy. I'll draft a quarterback every year because, you know what, having too many quarterbacks, too many good quarterbacks is a great problem to have. Look at Belichick. He traded Brissett. He traded the kid to San Francisco. I mean, when you have a quarterback, you have assets.
Yeah.
All right, let's go to Jason in Virginia. He's going to be our final call with Rick. Jason, go right ahead, pal. How are you?
Hello? I'm doing pretty good. A quick question about if the Bills came, I know there's been some thing about not wanting to trade down that far, but say if they put in a package with Glenn, both their first rounds and something else, is that something the Giants should go for, or is that still something they should pass on?
Rick, what do you think?
Without a doubt, you want to give me two first-round picks to slide down? Like I said, unless you're in the market for a quarterback, hey, it's great to get an impact player and a difference maker. But if I'm doing my due diligence and I got two first-round picks, I'm drafting two starters, and this team needs a lot of help, not so much on the offense, maybe on the offensive line, but, hey, let's get a linebacker in here. Let's get an offensive lineman in here, a 20 and 21 or whatever they're picking.
What kind of players would you like in that area, 2021?
I would take Isaiah Wynn or Will Hernandez without hesitation because we need to build the interior of the line. And then I would probably go at linebacker, maybe a Tremaine Edmonds, and let's get the linebacker back to what Giants football is all about.
Good stuff.
Rick, we appreciate it, man. Good
stuff. Gentlemen. I love you guys.
Always good to see you.
Oh, absolutely.
Rick Saratella, NFL Rick. Draft Bible. We thank him for joining us, and you'll hear from Rick once again, or at least once or twice before we get to the draft. Everybody, thanks for joining us. We'll see you right in a couple of minutes. We'll take a quick break. We'll be back with Jeff Risen. We're not closing yet. I think it's a two-hour show. It's not 1 hour anymore. So we'll be back in a second on Big Blue Kickoff Live. Stick with us.
With the combine coming up, I thought I would reflect a little bit and think about my combine training. And I just remember being in the best shape of my life, you know, every day, 5 days a week, 6 days a week at a time, just working, grinding nonstop, eating healthy. You know, you have a meal plan. You got one day where you're doing 40 work. The next day you're working the L drill. Next day is position work, and it's just nonstop. And, you know, it was a challenging time, but I also got in the best shape of my life, and I think it prepared me for the grind of the NFL and what was to come. So, you know, good luck to all the guys that's going to be entering the combine and, you know, go ball out.
How you doing? Nice to meet you.
Just coming from a single parent household and to give back just always remind me of my childhood.
I didn't do what I do. Nah, I'm just playing. I ain't that advanced.
I always told myself if I get in a position, you know, I want to be able to help guys. So I always want to be relevant and have my face known in the community.
Hey, there we go.
We're back here on Big Blue Kickoff Live. Jeff Risen from Real GM will be with us in just a second. But we promised to hear from a couple of their offensive linemen that actually Rick Saratella just spoke about.
He
so
did.
I think it's a good idea to hear from them. Two guys expected to go in the 20 range. That's Will Hernandez and Isaiah Wynn. Will Hernandez, the tank boxcar of a prospect that if
Hog Molly Hernandez.
He almost went 40 reps. On, I think 37, is that where you finished at? On the bench press yesterday. So let's hear from him first. He talked about what type of offense he ran at UTEP and whether he can transition from a smaller school to the NFL.
Yeah, so back at UTEP, we ran a pro-style offense. We did a little bit of everything. Pulled a lot. We did a lot of counter, hit some inside zone and outside zone. That was more my junior year when we had a running back, Aaron Jones, current Green Bay Packers running back. We did a lot more zone when he was around. But my last year, we focused more on gap scheme plays, a lot of power, dubs, counter, and a little bit of everything for sure. I think my physical ability has helped me and has, you know, picked up the slack in a lot of other areas. My technique, you have to have technique to play offensive line. I think it follows, and then the last one, obviously. But I think once you learn how to use your technique along with your strength, I think that's what really is what makes you separate you from the crowd. So you can have all the technique in the world. If you don't have physical attributes, you know, it can only help you so much. If you can have all the strength in the world, if you don't know how to use it, it's not really worth anything. So I think both of those coincide together.
And he gave me the same type of answer when I spoke to him at the Combine, and he talked about, Paul,
The pro-style offense.
What I say? The combine? I meant the senior bowl.
Which
I'm sorry.
We're here at now.
Correct. Yeah, he talked about, you know, the pro-style stuff he did in college, and it wouldn't be that much of a change for him.
No, I thought for me, one of the things that stood out when I wrote my notes, he talked about leverage being a big part of his game. Now, he's a monster. You would think it would be strictly power, and why would a guy like that even think about leverage? But he did say stresses leverage is part of his game.
And I talked about his technique and how important it is.
Very, very smart, intelligent, and great to hear. The other thing he said is it's very important to play with a mean streak. And you love offensive linemen who have a mean streak. And he said, the quote was, that's the way the sport should be played. How could you not just absolutely dig this guy?
That's the type of guard you're looking for. Another guard is Isaiah Wynn out of Georgia. Now, he was the starting left tackle at Georgia. And if you look at him, just from the, you know, the boxiness, maybe not the tallest guy in the world, he looks like a guard. And that's where he is going to transition to at the NFL level. And he talked about how the importance of the guard position at the pro level is something he's excited about.
It's just very important. I mean, you get the – nowadays, you're getting more the quicker guys. You know, they're not also just powerful. They're also quicker, and they're able to work and move. So I feel like now they're also looking for guards who is more athletic than probably in previous years.
That's Isaiah Wynn, and he's a guy, Paul, that people love his mobility. If you're looking for an athletic guard, this is a guy that played left tackle in the SEC. He's a guy that's a technician. He's going to move. You're on a zone scheme, which, by the way, Pat Shurmur traditionally has. Mm-hmm. He's the type of guy that could be great for your offense.
Yeah, you know, John, I did not listen to him amongst all the offensive linemen. I had a bunch of them I got to. I just couldn't get to all of them. But you are right. He's not so much the force, the bruiser, the power guy. That's a guy who you're going to put on the move a lot. And I understand that. For me, I think we were talking to some of our experts yesterday. There seems to be a little bit more of a trend to the bigger, bulkier boxcar kind of guys now. It's starting to push into that direction. That doesn't mean that Wynn can't be a good player and isn't a good fit for a bunch of teams, including maybe the Giants. But I'm starting to see the worm turn a little bit to the bigger mooses or elephants, if you will.
And he's a guy that I had hoped might be available for the Giants at the top of round two, but it certainly sounds like he's a guy that could be gone in the early 20s.
Just like I felt about Will Hernandez. Well, he seems to be moving up.
I was on Will Hernandez first. Don't take credit for Will Hernandez for a bit.
John mentioned him to me. He went to the Senior Bowl, folks, and he sends me this text message. You will love this guy because John knows exactly how I think. And, well, it's not hard. I share it with everybody.
Yeah, that's correct.
And so immediately I went, okay, let me get the right away. And I instantly, I mean, it was like, get the boxes of candy and the flowers out. I love this guy, Will Hernandez.
And there's other alignment too. You know, Matt McGlinchey, a tackle. You have Austin Corbett, a guard from Nevada that some people could sneak into the end of the second round, top of the third. Mm-hmm. James Daniels from Iowa, a guard-center combo that – people just love. They said in the drills today he was phenomenal. You hear him talk yesterday. Smart guy. You know those Kirk Ferentz offensive linemen mm-hmm. at Iowa coming to the league. They do a good job.
Always.
And we mentioned Price from Ohio State, who thankfully did not tear his pec. Another guard, center, you know, combo player that's played both, that can do both. He's kind of a more of a nastier, you know, mm-hmm. beat you up type of guy. Daniel's more of an on-the-move technician guy like Wynn. So a lot of good options in that late first, early second round area, Paul, but it feels like after you get through that group, there's a bit of a fall off when it comes to the interior linemen.
A guy who I thought might sneak up into that level, and unfortunately, it seems like our consensus from here is that Rankins is not there. He seems to be down another bit of a notch.
Martinez Rankin from Mississippi State.
Yeah. You know, and we even had one of our guys, I think yesterday, said they think he's a guard. He's not even a tackle.
Yeah, I saw that as well.
You know, so that's a guy who may be slipping a little bit.
By the way, I said we'd have Madeline Burke with Chris Pettit. He's one of our scouts here with the New York Football Giants. We hope to have Jeff Risden back after the interview. But let's take a listen. Madeline had a chance to talk to Chris Pettit. And I think one thing you really want to focus on here, folks, they talked about the type of player that the Giants are looking for when it comes to the draft. So here's Madeline with scout Chris Pettit.
We're here in Indianapolis at the 2018 NFL Combine. I'm Madeline Burke alongside Giants scout Chris Pettit. Now, Chris, you guys have been looking at these players for months, even years, some of them. Yeah. How has this evaluation evolved into what you see at the Combine? And are you looking for more of a validation of what you know or for your opinion to be swayed here?
It isn't a validation of what you know. You're really here. What you get out of here, the best part is the medical and sitting down with the players, going to know them as people, their intelligence. But a lot of the evaluation was done in the fall, the film. What they did on Saturdays is the biggest part of the puzzle. But here it's, you know, you really don't want to kill a guy if he runs slow or doesn't work out well. It's more the medical and the intelligence is what we're getting here at the Combine.
Yeah, because you've seen what these guys can do in a game. We've got plenty of sample size there. Now, I mean, how has the evaluation process changed over the years? You've been doing this for a while.
It's changed, but at the heart of it, it really hasn't. Because, again, it comes down to what the game tape tells you is where you should get your biggest evaluation from. But technology has played into it over the years. We're able to access film easier now. You can share information easier. You can do more games where in the past you could really get to a school, you can do three tapes and that's it and you got to go. So now you can do some tapes beforehand. You get, you know, 5-6 games done on a player. So,
I mean, you mentioned the wealth of information you have at your fingertips. Yep. You've got scouts, GMs, coaches, all these people looking at the same players, the same talent, but having different opinions. As a staff at the Giants, do you guys have a collective group of differing opinions, or is it more like-minded? And if the opinions are different, how do you work to get a collaborative assessment of a prospect?
That's a good question. Well, what you want as a staff, I think any staff, any team, you want to have, for the Giants, we want to have the basis of what we call an NYG type, a guy who's a Giant football player, and we have those beliefs. But you want your staff, when you're doing the evaluation, you do want different opinions, because to see how a guy might change throughout the season. You know, the first thing I learned as a scout for the Giants was be your own man, have your own opinion. You want a staff that does have their own opinions, then creates conversation, and then that's how you develop your full evaluation on the player. But at the end of the day, like I said, the number one thing is we know what New York Giant players are, and that's what you want staff to believe in, but their opinion on the talent, it could be different.
Right, and perhaps the toughest part of your job is finding those New York Giant players and the players that the talent translates from the college level to the professional level. Are there certain intangibles that you look for that says this guy could be a success on a grander scale?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's pretty much basic football, toughness, competitiveness, intelligence. I mean, that's the heart of a really good football player. You're going to find smart, fast, tough, you know, is the basis of a, you know, NYG type, as we call it.
Great. Chris Pettit, thank you so much for taking the time.
You're welcome. Thank you.
We're back here on Big Blue Kickoff Live. John Schmelk, Paul Dottino. The man in the middle is Bob Glauber from Newsday. Friend of the program, Bob. How are you?
I'm good.
Has Combine been fun so far?
Combine's been great. The usual overload of information, just kind of trying to get through the waves and get through it. It's good.
No, it's trying to
good informational thing.
Not trying to gag on the smoke is more like it.
Well, the smoke, yeah, there's always smoke.
There's
gotta
be
smoke.
Smoke
comes more around draft time, right?
I mean, there's some floating around here too.
A little bit, but there's very little. Teams are very seldom giving away, you know, things. I like that John Dorsey, the general manager of the Browns, says, "Hey, we're open for business. Call me."
Right?
Sure. At 1-4, yes,
absolutely.
So it's like, bring it on.
What's your feel from? You take more of a national standpoint than a focus on the local teams. Your feel for this class, even the free agent market, what do you think kind of has been the big talk around town the last couple of days? You know, we've seen agents all over the place. We've seen GMs all over the place, coaches. What's kind of been the feel you've gotten from everybody around here the last couple of days?
Well, it's the kind of usual stuff. I mean, it's just different names being floated into the different spots. And I guess the big news here, to me, the trend is for Kirk Cousins going to Minnesota, which is a big thing. Now, Denver, I don't think, is out of it. I think the Jets might be out of it because, quite frankly, all things being equal with the money.
He wants to win,
He wants to win, and, you know, Denver is a little bit more better set up for that. And the Vikings are really set up for that. So they may be a quarterback away.
They almost won last year.
Exactly, with Case Keenum.
Yeah.
So, you know, that seems to be the vibe that I'm getting around here, and that really creates a lot of dominoes for how things fall in free agency and in the draft.
Bob, you just mentioned the Jets, so I'm going to ask you something because I know you have do a lot of time in both locker rooms. How likely is it that the Jets may call the Giants and say, you know what, if we don't get Cousins, we may want to trade up with you guys to 2 to get a quarterback?
And how likely the Giants say yes?
I think it's unlikely the Giants say yes. I think it's unlikely the Jets try to go up that far. Now, listen, I could be wrong, but what you say there is, you know, Dave Gettleman did kind of open that door a crack, and Mike Maccagnan has always kept that door open of moving up or down.
Right.
Unless the Giants are not sold on a particular player at 2, I don't see them messing around with this thing. I see them taking a player. I think it'll, you know, there's a lot of Saquon Barkley smoke. I don't know, man.
Is it smoke, though, or is it reality?
I don't know. I don't know. I mean, that's the key question.
The fun, isn't it?
Of course. But, you know, you don't get the 2 pick very often unless you're the Browns. When you're the Giants,
wow.
When you're a functional team.
He's not wrong.
I mean, I'm not wrong.
He's not wrong.
When you're a functional organization in the NFL,
you don't get the number two pick, but every, you know, 10, 20 years. When was the last time they had number two? 81? Lawrence Taylor? So I think you take advantage of that. Unless there are so many warts on one of these quarterbacks that Dave Gettleman is convinced that they can do better lower down or else just do better in a different year, it's hard not to think quarterback. And, you know, Josh Rosen seems to be pegged in that spot, and I think it makes a lot of sense. Maybe Sam Darnold, if the Browns go with Josh Allen, or if they trade out of that spot and someone else goes up for Darnold. So I do see it pointing to quarterback, but listen, you know, I've learned over the years, as you have, P-Dot, that things change.
Do you, what quarterback do you think is most likely, A, to be there, who the Browns will let go past them at
right.
And then what quarterback do you think is a good mix for, you know, what the Giants like, Gettleman's personality, Shermer's offense, and Eli being there for another year?
You know, I think that all things being equal, I'll say today that it should be, and I think it will be, Darnold and then Rosen. That's probably chalk. That's kind of what's been talked about quite often from the beginning, and I think that at the end of the day that will happen.
Do you buy the Rosen personality issues?
I think Rosen's personality. Rosen has an interesting personality. He has a personality.
Which is what you don't want, really.
Well, you want just a robot?
Well, you want Derek Jeter, Eli Manning, who never says anything that anybody has any controversy with. I mean, right, don't you?
Right.
But I'm trying to think. Phil Sims had personality.
Yeah, Phil Sims.
Well, that's true.
He had pizzazz, man. He had it going.
Still has it.
And he still has it going.
Darn
so
straight he does.
I don't buy that. Listen, it's good when you're a quarterback that you can let things you know, go off your shoulders and off your back. That's good. And Josh Rosen has opinions about things. He's not afraid of making them known. But I will say he did dial things back as the season went on. He was, you know, he did it on purpose, I think. So he has the wherewithal to do that. He's a very smart guy.
Oh, no, he is
and
a smart guy. There's
smart
no doubt that.
He knows the room. He knows how to read a room. Who else knows how to read a room? Eli Manning. So they're smart in different ways. Eli
right.
is smarter and doesn't need to tell you that he's smart. Rosen doesn't need to tell you he's smart, but he's a very intelligent person. I think he'll do very well in this league. I think he's, you know, when you're a quarterback and you're playing in a set, a pro set like the Giants are, much more traditional, I think you have to, like Dave Gettleman says, you have to win from the pocket. And Darnold and Rosen, to me, check those boxes. And Rosen's got a little flair, a little pizzazz, a little personality, and there's nothing wrong with that, as long as you can back it up. Now, don't be going crazy, planting flags in the middle of the field when you beat a rival. Don't do that.
Giants don't keep any flags on the sideline. It's okay.
Yeah, the Jets do. Yeah.
So. Bob, we will hear from the quarterbacks at their media session later on today, but let me ask you this. Of the people you've heard from in the opening days of the Combine, who was the most intriguing or surprising or certainly piqued your interest just from their interviews?
You know, these general questions are always, they always get me.
I didn't mean to throw you a curve.
I mean, Saquon Barkley to me was interesting. He's got that electrifying personality. He's got pizzazz. He's got the it factor. So I think he's the one who kind of stood out the most. Just in terms of his personality, he's eager. They're all eager. And that's the thing you get. You get a lot of yes, sir, no, sir.
A lot of sirs.
A lot of sirs at this time. And
yet somehow when they enter the locker room, you don't get many sirs anymore,
no,
do you?
No, they're around a couple of years. They kind of get the lay of the land and things change. But they're all excitable. But I do think Barkley has this certain charm to him. And,
okay.
Pizzazz, I keep using that word, but they're in a good way.
Well, let's say this.
Right.
I don't mean to disparage Notre Dame in any way because I don't think that they just have, like, thugs, but I didn't know what to expect from Nelson or McGlinchey. Mm-hmm. And when I talked to those guys yesterday at the media session, they just blew me away.
Yeah.
I thought they were great speakers.
Yeah. I saw you talking to somebody very excitedly.
Will Hernandez.
I don't know who it was, but it was
Hernandez.
But that could mean any one of thousands of people over the years that you were talking to excitedly.
This right? is true.
So it was somebody at a table, and I just did. Oh,
Greg Sinnott, the Wagner tackle.
Yep, that was it.
Indeed.
Okay. All right. So you're getting him ready, just in case he's in the locker room. You say, "Hey, local
guy."
I knew it. Right. I knew it from the start. Okay.
Don't ignore the Northeast Conference. That's all I've got to say.
Bob, what final question for me? What's your feel for the free agent market, especially on the offensive line side of things, which I think a lot of people think the Giants will be players in?
Yeah. I think it's a solid but not spectacular market. You know, probably the one of the more attractive guys on the market, the back thing is an issue, is Justin Pugh. And I don't know that they're going to go that high. I think they'll – you know, this is not the kind of year where you're going to tap into, a $10 million a year offensive lineman and fix your problem.
Well,
so I think this is
– Somebody will try to do that, though.
Someone will try, and someone will overthink it, and someone will try to rationalize – putting that in there, but this is really not that market. I think the draft is solid with offensive linemen and tackles. So I think they'll come away. I think Dave Gettleman will come away with 2 to 3 offensive linemen who can be answers to this year's puzzle.
Even if they're not the guys that are at the top of these free agent lists.
But I'm talking free agency and the draft.
Of course.
The combination, I think that he will get some of his hog mollies in place, a good portion of it, and try to fix that problem, which has been the biggest problem over the last couple of years.
Let me ask you this, Bob. You know, we talk so much about over the years the Giants have allowed the linebacker spot to kind of slip away since the days of Taylor and Banks. And then, you know, Antonio Pierce was really good for a while there too, but – draft-wise, it's been a position that they have kind of pushed to the back burner.
Yeah.
Do you expect that to change now with Dave Gettleman, who seems to have more value in the position?
Yeah, I think that will, and I think for that reason, because Gettleman does value them more. Now, you know, you've gone to a 4-3, so the emphasis...
3-4.
You've gone in the past...
Right.
The emphasis in the Jerry Reese era, and in the Ernie Accorsi era was, you don't need linebackers. You got to focus on your defensive line. And, you get OC, you get Tuck, you get Strahan. So that's the dominant part of your offense. But when you're going to the three of your defense, when you're going to the 3-4, of course linebackers become more important. So you've got to do that. I think they're in kind of a weird transition because they are a 4-3 roster right now going to a 3-4 defense. So I think there'll be a better defense in time, but it is going to take – I don't think you can underestimate that transition from the 4-3 to the 3-4.
Bob, great stuff. We appreciate the time, my friend.
Thank you.
Bob Glauber from Newsday. We'll be back with Jeff Risden from Real GM right after this on Big Blue Kickoff Live on Giants.com. Hang with us.
Hey, buddy, how you doing?
I think it's very important to give back to the community.
Nice to meet you. How you doing, guys?
Hey.
Ready for some football?
I think the Giants organization does a great job.
What's going on, buddy? Yeah. Glad to see you out here, man.
I try to be a part of that. I try to help out as much as I can just for the community.
Smile, guys.
I feel like especially the younger generation, they're going to be the next up. So to start them off early and be able to give back to them and show them the way, it's just setting us up for the future.
Have a Merry Christmas. You guys get a gift bag?
Yeah.
You got a gift card in there and then get some games.
It's really important for us to continue to do that.
You're getting a guy that has that it factor, you know? You can't teach it. You can't learn it. It's either you have it or you don't. This is what I love to do. This is my passion.
We're back here on Big Blue Kickoff Live. John Schmelk, Paul Dottino. Jeff Risden now joins us from Real GM. Jeff, we appreciate the time. Draft class, we haven't had a chance to really focus on what's happening today with the workouts. Anything has jumped out to you so far that maybe we've missed while we've been talking to the people out here?
Jumping is the optimal word because Saquon Barkley jumped 41 inches in his vertical leap.
That sounds pretty good.
Yeah, it is. Bo Scarborough just set the combine record for the broad jump for running backs at 232
pounds. Bo Scarborough,
yes.
Huh?
crazy.
Bigger guy. That's surprising.
232 pounds, and he did, I think it was 11 feet 6 inches.
Did Byron Jones held the last one, if I recall
believe
properly?
So. Yeah. Just ridiculous amount of athleticism amongst the running back class. It's been just stands out with that.
Has Barkley run his 40 yet?
He has not, and there is question whether he will run it or not.
Oh, really?
He might have a medical exemption, and the side part of that is if you do everything else so well, is why would you need to do that?
How could it help
true
him?
Too.
Yeah, there's nothing really for him to gain after what he's done already. He knocked it out of the park in the interview sections. Had the giant crowd in front of him there and answered every question just the way you wanted to hear it. Very well-polished young man, clearly understands what he's doing here. And with the explosiveness on the vertical jump, my goodness, that's a 41-inch vertical at 228 pounds, something
Ooh,
like
Barkley?
That.
I think he was 232, actually. I mean, if you just look at him at the podium, just the size of his calves.
Yes.
I mean, it's ridiculous.
You know, I remember sitting last year and watching Myles Garrett up there, and he's sitting in his shirt, and it looked like he was flexing just sitting there. You can kind of see that with Barkley, too, just that there's twitch to him just when he's sitting. It's unbelievable.
Jeff, let me ask you something, because it's kind of – Dave Gettleman said the other day that this is like the underwear Olympics, which many teams have used that term over the years for the combine. But yet, when you get an old school guy like Dave Gettleman, who seems to kind of put a little bit less emphasis on the combine, mm-hmm. you also know that there are a lot of other teams who seem to be putting more emphasis on it. You see the attention that is paid to this thing. Where do you really see this going? Is there a trend really in the other direction, or is it still going to be out of control for many years to come?
You know, honestly, I think it's on a team-by-team basis. I think you got your new school teams. The Browns tried analytics. Didn't necessarily work out for them, but there was, you know, there's that group that are, you know, heck on, you know, do they hit the metrics that I need for length, for vertical jump, for explosive drills, for bench press? And then there are the old-school scouts who are like, I don't really care. I just want to see him play. Can the guy play?
Right.
And it seems to be more of a divide from team to team, sort of on an individual philosophy basis. Gettleman obviously goes into the old school, but there's a lot of the new school, and you see it with the rise of things like Pro Football Focus and Football Outsiders getting more, you know, involved in what's going on in the league. I think they're sort of blending, and I think you're seeing more blending of it, and it's kind of a weird situation for here, because a lot of the old school guys like the combine for the medical evaluation,
yes.
for the ability to get to know the kids, you know, sit down in front of, just even for 15 minutes, you can tell if you click with them personally or not, and I think that's still a big part of it, and that's something that any team can get out of this, even if they don't really care about, you know, how much a guy bench presses.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You were listening to us talking to Bob Glauber on the quarterback class. The Giants, who knows if they'll take a quarterback at two. I think they have a lot of options. How do you delineate the top four? Maybe it's for you it's the top five guys in this quarterback class. And which of the group do you think is worthy of the second pick in the draft? As Dave Gettleman said, you want to get a transcendent player at that spot.
Yes, you
do. And what's a good fit with how the Giants operate?
You know, I like Sam Darnold a little bit more than Josh Rosen, just because I think he offers that – the je ne sais quoi, for lack of a better word, of the intangible around him. I think Rosen is a better passer right now.
I agree with that.
But I think Darnold has the ability to do things that Rosen necessarily can't. Moving out of the pocket. No. I mean, I think Rosen gets dogged a little bit. This guy was an all-state tennis player. You don't get to be an all-state tennis player in California without having good feet.
I didn't realize he was an all-state tennis
okay.
guy. That's interesting.
He's not fast and he's not swift, but he can move around a little bit. So there's I think that narrative gets overplayed a little bit. He's not going to run. He's going to have negative yardage. He's not Eli, but he's not much above that either in terms of mobility. Even a young Eli. But I think he would fit very well. And I heard what Bob said, and I agree with him. I think the personality fit with Rosen, I think, would be a good thing for New York. I like the way that he doesn't need to show that he's confident or smart. It just sort of comes out from him. He's not like an outwardly, you know, Darnold has a little bit of flash to him. Lamar Jackson has a little bit of flash to him. Baker Mayfield, my goodness, that might be all there is with
yeah.
him. And I think the more muted style, I think that would be an easier transition from Eli to the next quarterback.
How about the fragility part of the conversation with Rosen, though? Because I think that does scare some people. Two
it
concussions
does.
This year, and then
yeah.
he had throwing shoulder. I mean, my goodness, he's a baseball pitcher, quarterback, throwing shoulder. Look at Andrew Luck. You're like, oh, boy.
Yeah, that's a rough thing. And you know, Josh Allen has that, too. He has a steel plate in his shoulder, which I don't think gets talked about enough.
No, that doesn't get talked about.
It doesn't seem to affect the arm strength at all.
No, it doesn't. But
when did he hurt his shoulder? High school?
High school, yeah.
Okay. In fact, maybe he's got a little Steve Austin $6 million man thing going there.
If he said he's going to throw the ball 90 yards at his pro day, I want to see that. That would be something else. But
he's probably done it.
I bet he has, and he hit the goalpost last week from midfield. You know, Kyle Bowler 2.0.
Man,
love that stuff.
Man, oh man.
Not sure that it translates to the NFL field that well, but it's pretty cool to watch.
Yeah, that's the one thing. I don't think he wants to hear like the Jamarcus Russell comparison, which Mayock gave him, and then Kyle Bowler probably wants to avoid those.
Yeah.
Just saying.
Yeah, I'm not a huge Josh Allen fan, but back to Rosenfurst. The concussions are concerning. Just because that seems to be – there's such a growing awareness of the concussions and what they do and the post-football life and how much it can trouble you after you're done playing. And I think the players themselves are a lot more aware of it than they used to be, and I think they might be – is he going to be subconsciously worried about getting another concussion? You know, is that going to affect his play at all? And you can't really tell that until they get out there, but that is a definite risk with him.
Yeah, you know, first guy I remember at the quarterback spot who was worried about that was Roger Staubach,
yeah.
who retired a bit prematurely because he said he had gotten some concussions and he just didn't like the way that felt. And he got out of the Cowboys, I think, probably 2 or 3 years at least earlier than he could have.
And now he's a billionaire real estate guy, by the way, so it might have been a good move.
Maybe he did jump at the right time. You know, the Houston Texans were dealing with that with their tight end C.J. Fedorowicz. He had 3 concussions last year. There are a lot of people around that organization that are encouraging him to retire, and he's 26 years old. He just signed a $35 million contract a year ago. That's something that I don't think the fans are as aware of how much the players care about the concussions issues as what they do, because it's becoming a much bigger picture issue for them.
Jeff, John asked you about value earlier in his question,
yeah.
and I want to ask you about positional value, because there seems to be a lot of debate when you talk about a superstar prospect like Barkley, or even Quentin Nelson, who is a superstar guard prospect.
Oh, my goodness.
But you're talking about two positions that in a lot of football 101 books, you can't draft in the top three.
I'm with you on the running back. The guard, though, if you can put Quentin Nelson, especially in the Giants lineup, my goodness. If you're losing Weston Richburg, if you're losing Justin Pugh, why not? I mean, that's what you need. I wouldn't have a problem with that at all. I think he's the best player in this draft, regardless of position. And if you can get that, wherever you can get it.
Mm-hmm.
Take it.
And I've asked this question before. I'll ask it to you. Drop off between Nelson and the next group of guards, or drop off between Barkley and the next group of running backs? Which
you know,
think
that,
is bigger?
That's a really good question, because they're both like the strongest classes in this draft,
yeah.
I think. Guys like Isaiah Wynn. We watched the guy from Nevada who's having a very
Austin Corbett. Yeah,
having a wonderful combine. Probably elevated himself into the conversation in the top of the second round for a team like the Giants that are in need. It's fascinating. The running backs, though, my goodness. Ronald Jones, Nick Chubb jumping 38.5 inches today on his surgically repaired knee.
I guess
wow.
it's okay.
Yeah.
Wow.
Sony Michel. I mean, the tier below those guys, you can find some productive running backs in that. So I would say probably you would want to lean more towards the guards on that, because I do think I can get a lot more out of the seventh running back than I can the seventh guard in this class.
Is there enough value, you think, at the bottom of the first round for a team like the Giants, who may want to trade up 5 or 6 spots? They got the second pick in the second round,
right,
where it's really worth it for them to give up an extra pick to get up into the 26, 28 range?
If they have a specific guy in mind, yeah, I wouldn't have a problem with that at all. It has to be the right guy for them, and they have to be sure that they wouldn't get him.
Well, it could be one of those linemen.
It very well could be, and that wouldn't be a bad move, because from the outside looking in on the Giants, the offensive line was such an issue. Every time I watched them, everything was about the offensive line, how nothing else worked because of that. And I think if you can rectify that solves a lot of the other ills on that team. So, yeah.
End of day two, start of day three, maybe even start of the second round if you want to push it. What linebackers do you like in this class, assuming Edmonds and Roquan Smith are long gone?
Yeah, and they will be. There's a couple guys today that are really under the radar. Chris Worley from Ohio State was the best player that I saw at the Shrine game at the linebacker position. He tested well, or didn't test yet, but measured well. I think he's a guy that you can get in the sixth or seventh round and can come in and help right away.
Wow.
There's some talent down at the bottom of that draft. One of the guys that I like, he's probably not going to like me saying that he could play off-the-ball linebacker, but a guy like Joe Osman from Central Michigan, he's not even here. 6'2", 249 pounds as a college defensive end. He's trying to make the transition to be an off-the-ball linebacker who can rush the passer.
Sounds like a 3-4 outside linebacker right?
And so he's got the potential to do something like that. There's a lot of fun guys down at the bottom of the draft to definitely keep your eyes on.
I'm writing them down right now. Those are good names. You're the first person to name those two guys for us.
Well, yeah. There you go.
That is true. That is true. But I also want to build off another thing that you just said about he was not here. Are there two or three guys that you really like and are so disappointed that they didn't make the trip to Indianapolis for whatever reason?
Yeah, he's one of them. I happen to be, and he does not have an NFL future. I'll preface that. I'm a big Brogan Roback fan, the quarterback from Eastern Michigan. Mm-hmm. The fact that he took that program and got them to a bowl, they had more losses in the last 10 years than any program ever had in 10 years. And he and then their coaching staff turned them around. And I'm a bit of a Mac Shield, so I'll admit to that.
Okay.
We had a linebacker at Ohio University, my alma mater, Quentin Poling, one of the nation's leaders in tackles. I would have liked to have seen him here. He didn't make it. He's probably not going to make the NFL either, but it would be nice to see those guys get rewarded. I'm a sucker for the small. Glauber here talking about Greg Sinnott. There's a guy. I was very impressed with him down at the Shrine game. I thought he had a very good potential, and I think he's going to get drafted with out of Wagner. That's awesome.
And spent the first few years of his college career on the basketball floor as a forward.
He only played 2 years for the football team.
Yeah, he has potential. I regret this now. I could have seen him play in person. They played Western Michigan last year. That's where I live.
Yeah.
Didn't go to the game. I didn't think there was any reason to go. Missed out on it.
All right, let's take one call with Jeff before we say goodbye. Oscar in Florida, he joins us. He has a question about the draft for draft. Jeff, what's going on, Oscar? How are you?
Good. How you guys doing?
Go ahead, Oscar.
Hi.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Hello? Hey, so my question is, I heard the guy before, he was talking about, or there was two callers that called about trade down with the Bills, and I wanted to talk about that too. I did like a little bit of a research, I guess, on my own end to see what they had picked. Are where they had picked in 2010 compared to the other people that we could draft with, like the Jets, Denver, some people have talked about Arizona. But what I've seen, they usually, their average was like 12. So I'm thinking, you know, if we're able to do a trade with them, get 21, 22, possibly number 3 this year, a first or second round next year, I would even try to see if I can squeeze another second rounder in 2020, because who knows, you know, they're probably picking a quarterback if they're trading anyway. I would like to know, do you guys think that's good? Would that be a good haul? I mean, I'm hoping that maybe, you know, Isaiah Wynn, Billy Price, Willie Hernandez will probably be there for that 21 and 22, and then we can get, like, so many more players for the – and I'm thinking for the future, obviously, not just next year. Well, what do you guys think about that?
Yeah, I think it's a good question, Jeff.
It is a good question.
If you do move down to 21 and 22 – with the Bills, what else can you get besides those two?
Yeah, you know, you're out of the market for the top quarterbacks. You could possibly still get Lamar Jackson in that range, and I think he has a very good chance of being there in that range. If you're interested in him, you can still get that. You can definitely get Isaiah Wynn, Will Hernandez, guys like that that can build your offensive line. That the first tier of offensive tackles is down there. Connor Williams, who I happen to think he's going to be a guard, but he's going to probably go off in that range. You could address running back if you want to. That's going to be the area where Darius Geis, where Ronald Jones comes off, where Sony Michel could wind up getting. So you could get a pretty good haul out of that.
You know, real quick, go ahead. Besides those two first-round picks, though, in terms of value,
oh, yeah.
Are you getting a one next year? Or are you getting a two? What are you looking at?
You're probably looking at a two. I think the concept of giving up three number one picks for one other one, I think, even if it is number three moving up from 21 to 22, that seems like that would be a little bit too much to give.
Got See, it. Jeff, a lot yeah. of the rumors on the web coming out of Buffalo suggest that the Bills would try to package Cordy Glenn into a deal like that with the Giants because the Giants want offensive linemen. But
that makes sense.
Cordy Glenn has had some injury history, and, so are the Giants.
And a also, big cap number.
Yeah, yes. So are the Giants better off doing a deal like that for a Glenn, or are they better off just going draft-wise and just getting another lineman?
I would just go draft. Glenn, good player, but like you said, he's got a high cap figure. Sort of on the downside a little bit with all the injuries, I would take my chances with a fresh young guy.
Yeah,
Jeff, good stuff, man. We appreciate it.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you so
Great
much.
Thank you, Jeff.
Enjoy the rest of the combine.
It.
Jeff Risden, Real GM, does a great job. We'll be back with Kyle Krabs, our cleanup hitter. He wraps us up from the combine in Indianapolis. We'll be right back.
I'm going to tell you something. One of the funniest things was Deion Sanders. Okay. He, you know, of course, is he going to run? Is he going to run? So he shows up and he says, I'm running 240s and that's it. He gets up there and he runs his first 40, and he runs like a 4.28 or some ridiculous thing. So we figure he's not going to run the second one. Oh, no, he said, I'm running the 40s. He comes back, and the way it's set up, when you finish your 40, if you continue straight, you can run right out of the stadium. All right? He comes up for a second 40. He takes off. He runs about a 4.25, and as he's running away, he's waving at us. We all gave him a standing ovation. It was hysterical. It was hysterical. That's one of my favorite.
All right, our final segment on Big Blue Kickoff Live from the Combine, third consecutive two-hour show. Someone that joins us very often to talk about the draft, the man who runs NDT Scouting, who's made a lot of strides in the last few years, adding people, got the draft guide every year, which we love, and that's Kyle Krabs. Kyle, how are you?
I'm doing great. You know, this is second time here. Enjoy it more and more each time. It's you kind of settle into your groove. You get to focus and hammer out some work. So finally getting the on-field testing and getting some numbers to crunch.
One thing we actually haven't talked a ton about today, Paul, is the tackle class, believe it or not. We haven't asked a bunch of questions about it, so let's go there. We've had some testing today coming in. I'm not sure if anybody really thought any of these guys were worth a top 15 pick. What's your thoughts after today of the class? Where you think they're going to start falling off the board?
Sure. Man, you look at a team like Cincinnati and picking in the top 15, and that team just desperately needs quality offensive linemen, offensive tackle specifically. And a name that's been popular to plug there is Orlando Brown.
Well, not anymore.
I don't know what Orlando Brown did with his pre-draft testing or his training for this event, but you would have thought he just walked in off the street. You know, he was extremely poor with his athletic testing. It was, historically speaking, I keep a data pool of the past 12 years or so of combine data for athletes at each position. He's bottom tier, like historically, in almost every test.
In the last decade.
Yeah. I think slowest 40-yard dash time since 2003. He's the fifth slowest I saw. He had a sub-20-inch vertical jump. For perspective, Connor Williams jumped 34 inches today. His standing broad jump was 6'10", and I believe he measured in at 6'8". So he jumped 2 inches further on his distance jump than his actual height. He could have just fallen over and
That's
essentially
amazing.
Got the same score. I've never seen it. This is an exceptionally poor, and even more specifically, the body composition is not great.
You know, it's funny. I saw him at the podium yesterday, and I was shocked. And I said to Paul, I go, Paul, I thought he'd be thicker.
Yeah.
But he wasn't.
Yeah, he just carries a lot of extra weight in his abdomen. And, you know, he said it himself. He said, I've been a fat kid my entire life. So there's some work to be done there, and I think he's a player that's added more questions than answers throughout his process here.
I want to go through a couple of comments that he made yesterday, which makes this triply surprising for me.
Yeah.
Okay? He said it's important for him to be around a locker room and be a leader because he's done this whole life because his father was a pro player, and he has seen what an impact that can have on a team. That doesn't seem to coincide with what he did today. He talked about Villanueva was a guy he modeled himself after, especially in the run game. Whitworth was another guy he modeled himself after, as well as Lawan and Okung for their footwork, and said that his football IQ is what separates him from all the other tackles that are going to be on the board. And then he goes and does this.
Well, I would say the football IQ is a fair statement and assessment of his own game, that's where he's smart, and I think he does play to his strengths.
Not smart to do what he did today.
No. This athletic testing and putting your money where your mouth is and being a leader and being prepared for this, either his baseline was so exceptionally low that, you know, he couldn't do anything, which is hard to believe as a long-term starter at Oklahoma, or his preparations missed the mark, whatever it was.
Yeah.
So
his pro day is going to be key now.
Yes. He's a player that we're going to have that pro day date circled on the calendar. We're going to have to see, and he's going to have to make notable improvements across the board to make teams feel better about where he's at.
So between his testing, Connor Williams coming in with a 33-inch arm length, which for a tackle is a pretty big red flag. I remember Justin Pugh a few years ago. Mm-hmm. He came in at, 33 and a quarter, and people worried about him playing tackle. Does that mean Mike McGlinchey now is bottom line, top tackle on the board for, you think, most teams?
It's funny how this all comes full circle, right? Around this time last year, people were talking about 2018 offensive tackle class, and it was Mike McGlinchey.
Mm-hmm.
And then Mike McGlinchey comes out against Georgia, and he gets whooped up, and they lose the football game. He gives up the game-losing sack, and he struggled against Miami with speed, and people get down on Mike McGlinchey. And here we are at the Combine, and other guys have questions, and Mike McGlinchey is all of a sudden a name that's right back up at the top where we started 12 months ago.
Yeah.
It's fascinating part of the draft process. I personally still would like to give Connor Williams the benefit of the doubt to start outside and play your way in. If
okay.
you have a hard time playing there, or if you're a team that has an established left tackle and you want to upgrade your offensive line short and long term, you can play him at guard to start. But I would still want to give him the opportunity to try and play outside of tackle at some point.
What people have said to you about Williams is that his 2017 tape, and only played five games this year with the knee injury, it quote-unquote fell off a cliff from 2016. Mm-hmm. Do you agree with that assessment?
I definitely think he was not as polished as far as his movement and the angles that he took and
technique
his hand
stuff.
Work. And yeah, the technical mm-hmm. side of his game was... But I did like what I saw once he came back from the knee injury. He had the meniscus tear.
And he played two games right at the end of the year?
Two seasons at the back end of the season. And he got his mean streak back, I thought. You know, they played West Virginia, I believe, the first game that he came back. And he's uprooting guys and riding them into the ground. And he's back to burying people. So I really like the fact that it would have been really easy to just punt on the rest of the season and say, well, I'm going to get my knee right. I'm going to train for the combine. He came back and played with his team. And I thought his better showings were at the back end of the year as compared to the beginning of the year.
I think it's only appropriate, since you're the last guest on the last show we're doing this week, that I ask you, even though the Combine still has some more days to go, who's the one guy who has really jumped up for you as the result of what's happened here so far?
Well, we're talking about the offensive tackle class. UCLA offensive tackle Colton Miller had himself a spectacular day today. He had a standing broad jump of 10-1. In comparison, that's almost twice what Orlando Brown
mm-hmm.
jumped.
Mm-hmm.
He's a legit 6'8". He's long. He's athletic. He looked really good in the test, the field testing, and his ability to move his feet.
How about strength, though, for him?
Core strength was where I thought he was weak on film, where he was collapsed, and then there were other times where he was impatient on his pass-blocking platform. He was too eager to get into contact instead of letting guys come to him.
Mm-hmm.
But he looked really smooth in the field drills, which was one of my primary concerns. So I'm excited now to see if we get a little positive momentum on him and to go back and rewatch the film and try and cross-check. I'm seeing he's really able to stay tall on his hips and not waste movement. Wasted movement is a kiss of death for an offensive lineman because you have to be able to redirect against these super athletic defensive linemen.
Sure.
So I want to go back and cross-reference Colt Miller, but I thought he had excellent testing and on-field drills specifics for functional skills as well.
Great.
All right, second round, third round, let's talk middle of the draft as you dive deep into a lot of
yeah.
the bottom prospects
yeah.
here. And I know that's what you really like. Giants looking for linebacker middle rounds. Who do you like?
Darius Leonard, South Carolina State mm-hmm. kid, is super athletic.
I like him.
Yeah, he can get into pursuit really, really well. He flies around the field. I like Tigray Scales from Indiana as well. He's not mm-hmm. Somebody that was invited to the Senior Bowl, but I was surprised by that because I watched his film. I think he's a new age type linebacker in the NFL where he's a little undersized. He's around 6 foot. He's around 230, but he can play in space. He's great in pursuit, and for that Indiana defense, he was consistently the guy that was making splash plays, sacks, turnovers, tackles for loss. So I thought he was a little bit of a ball magnet that I was surprised, so I'm hoping to get some clarity here once we get around to linebackers, and I continue to talk to folks here at the Combine and figure out why wasn't Tigray Scales somebody that got an invite to the Senior Bowl, because I thought he was much more worthy than some of the kids that were invited and were at the event.
You know, when we talk about the third day for the Giants, I think we're kind of thinking that there are so many blue-chip guys at some of the positions they need, like offensive line, like maybe even running back in the top three rounds. We don't talk about the fact that Betcher is probably going to go defensive back heavy. That's what he does, a lot of dime and nickel packages mm-hmm. in his defense. Are there third-day defensive backs who have enough of a make-it grade that you would start looking at them?
Yeah, there's some really fascinating prospects in the safety class specifically that give you multiplicity on the back end.
And that's what they need.
So if you need personnel groups where you can trot a guy out and he can be that third safety, you know, you see mm-hmm. some teams starting to implement three safeties. He can come down into the slot and play some man-to-man coverage. I think one is Justin Reed from Stanford. I don't know how late he's going to be on the board because I think my personal valuation for him is much higher than – know where the narrative has
I guess
has
he's
put
smart.
Him. Yeah. But he can play man-to-man coverage and lock guys up in man-to-man. I thought that was one of his best traits, and then getting his head back around late to locate the football. He's a really good guy. Trayvon Henderson, the safety from Hawaii, had a really great showing at the Senior Bowl, and he was really reliable in coverage in the back end and had some man-to-man reps on film at Hawaii as well. Mm-hmm. So I don't know as far as necessarily the corner-specific groups. That's one of the areas where I'm still about middle tier. I still have that bottom half of my list that I want to continue to work through. But from the safety perspective specifically, there's three or four names off the top of my head that I can automatically think of to say, if you need a middle-round guy, the South Alabama kid, Jeremy Reeves, is another one that can play safety. He can play man-to-man.
He was at the Senior Bowl.
Has some experience at corner as well. And, I mean, he had an interception in the Senior Bowl game. He was one of the best performers throughout that week with consistency. So I think you're looking for hybrid guys in the back end. And defensive coordinators love that because because now offensive coordinators can't key on your personnel groups quite as easily if you got a guy that you can move around.
Final question before we get your prediction for the Giants. If you take a look at this group, the Giants might need some more depth at the pass rushing position. Olivier Vernon, Jason Pierre-Paul played an awful lot of snaps last year, and they're going to the 3-4. Those hybrid 3-4 stand-up rushers, who do you like? Maybe not first round, but third, fourth, fifth.
I like Kamoko Touré from Rutgers a whole lot.
How about that?
He had a terrific showing at the Senior Bowl, and I had the chance to sit down and talk with him for about 5 minutes at the Senior Bowl. Most engaging interview I've had in 3-4 years of doing draft work. And, getting into his personal background and talking about, he was a player that had two shoulder surgeries, one on each shoulder.
Missed all 2016, right?
Cost him essentially two full seasons. And he talked about, you know, being a basketball kid growing up and having to embrace the football culture of being in a weight room and molding your body and changing your body. And he talked about that process and how hard that was for him to spend 2 years sitting and watching your teammates play without you. And then seeing him put it together for a strong senior season where he actually played the run fairly well as well and had a great showing at the Senior Bowl. I think he has some terrific cornering skills. He's a guy I really like.
All right, finally, Giants pick first, second round. Give it to me. I want two.
I would love to see him take Josh Rosen. Personally, set the table for long-term, the heir to Eli Manning. And second round, you know, maybe Ronald Jones. Get a running back. Mm. I'm going to go sexy picks here for the Giants, and let's get
two
some
California
skill guys.
Kids, huh?
Yeah, get the
Got them signing O linemen in free agency.
Yeah,
because they got to get them somewhere.
Yeah, and I don't know what guards you're going to take that you feel good that early in the second round, except for maybe Austin Corbett from Nevada.
Think Hernandez and Wynn are gone by then?
I think Hernandez is probably gone, and I definitely think Wynn is gone. I think Wynn's probably going to go top 20.
How about Daniels and Price?
Wow.
Price is interesting because he had the pec tear. So he may be in play there if teams feel like he's not somebody that's going to be able to play in training camp, although his camp is saying that they're expecting him. It's a minor thing that he should be good to go for training camp.
Mm-hmm. How about Daniels from Iowa?
I like Daniels. I'm not as crazy as him as some of my contemporaries are. I know he's really effective uprooting guys, and he's technically polished. I just thought he was a little wild in space, so I think he's got a little room to grow in that capacity. But as far as his point of attack stuff, he's very polished. He's going to be a day one starter for somebody.
My man. Kyle Krabs, NDT
Thank
Scouting.
You, appreciate it.
His draft guy will launch in a few weeks. Keep your eye on it. You can follow NDT Scouting on Twitter. You can get it there. For Paul Dottino, for Kyle Krabs, and all of our guests today, and thank you to our crew, Matt Swenson, Devin McDuffie, Michael Becton, Christine Belluio, did a great job getting this on. It's a team effort. Couldn't have done it without them. We thank them for that. And our entire crew and all our guests again. We'll see you back in New Jersey on Monday on Big Blue Kickoff Live. Enjoy the rest of the Combine this weekend.
This is only the start. You guys have great futures ahead of you.
Caught by Ingram over the defender.
This kid had the ability to open his hips and go get it.
Rubens on the high bubble to the football.
Bang.
Pass is intercepted by Landon Collins.
This kid is so powerful.
What a play by Devon Kennard.
We'll see how exceptional a wide receiver this kid is.
Touchdown, Giants. Jump ball. Odell Beckham Jr. made the catch with one hand for the touchdown.